right, everybody. Welcome back to episode 3 of Warmans. I'm Bill, Roast Bill on the forums. I play Retribution, Convergence. Those are pretty much what I'm sticking with right now.
What's up, everybody? It's Brian B. Jake, Fauxhawks, Jake, Signar.
Hey, it's Jason LaFave. You can just call me Jay. I play Signar and Kador, and I'm from Flint, Michigan. Shout out to Gamer Sanctuary, the best local gaming store in town.
All right, and I'm Dan. I play at GG with Brian and Bill. I play Kador, I play Circle, I play Rhett, and I've just started playing a little bit of Signar. Really, I'll play just about anything, but, you know.
Very cool. All right, so we've got something new here. We're trying 4 voices tonight. We got a couple of Kador experts. We're going to actually do some more BFF this week. We're going to cover Kador as it seems to be in high demand. And when we're done with some Kador chats, we're going to tackle a listener-suggested subject of how to break a brick. I think Brian actually wanted to talk. He's a little excited about something that came out that's coming out soon from Privateer. Brian?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out a joke because you said high demand, and I was like, oh, fuck, I got to jump in right now. But anyway, I'm really excited about High Command. It's a living card game / deck-building game coming out. I've read some of the spoilers, looked at some of the card art and stuff. Basically the idea of it, I think it's sort of a Dominion-esque game, and you play a faction, so you have a set of cards that you can buy from that's faction-specific, which Dominion is not like that. Dominion just has sort of a market or library or whatever they call it, where there's about 10 cards you can choose from. And then there's supposedly a lot more player interaction, which is the biggest problem with a lot of those games, Dominion and Ascension, etc. You kind of feel like you're playing yourself most of the time, and it's just kind of who builds the best victory point engine. But this seems a little different.
Who's playing solitaire the best at the table?
Yeah, you know, a lot of Dominion games kind of feel that way. Yeah. Even the cards that do interact with other players are sort of bland, in my opinion. I don't know. Dominion's a fantastic game, obviously, and it's the archetype for all these games. But this one seems to have a little bit of different stuff. But yeah, I'm stoked about it. There is a little bit of mopiness right now, which I kind of agree with. Apparently there's some exclusive cards that are going to be only available at conventions and only available at the Kickstarter and shit like that. I'm not a big fan of that idea. I don't like exclusivity. I don't like limited edition whatevers.
I don't know why people get butthurt about stuff like that.
I like when I get them because then I eBay them and make a lot of money. Right. Because I don't care about things like that too much. But if it's a thing that if it's a component of the game that would say, oh look, Epic Haley card only available at Gen Con. You know, get the fuck out, everybody else. You lose because you didn't go to Gen Con.
Well, it's not like other people having these exclusive cards ruins the game for you at your kitchen table, does it?
Well, if you at some point feel like playing it competitively, which is kind of a big if with this sort of game.
Yeah.
But if you do, yeah, it's kind of a deal. But I I'm just annoyed at the – like if I want that Epic Haley feet card or whatever ridiculous thing it is, you know, I just want to be able to get it. So
counterpoint, that makes going to conventions special and shit like that.
Yeah, because going to Gen Con is not special enough.
Well, I'm just saying.
I have confidence in Privateer Press that they wouldn't, you know, break their own game like that. Everything they've ever put out, it's kind of – shoot, I don't know how to say it. Edit this out.
Balanced?
Yeah, thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. Everything they've ever put out has just been balanced. You know, it can be good, but it still fits into the game. I don't think they would break their brand new card game with these exclusive cards. Right out of the gate.
It's probably true. I guess I'm just jelly, is what it boils down to.
Well, but, I mean, if you remember Gen Con Druid Gone Wilder last year, they had like a week where you could buy it from the Privateer Press store.
Yeah.
Even if you weren't at Gen Con, even though it was a Gen Con exclusive. Maybe they'll do something like that.
Yeah. And again, it's not crushing my enjoyment of playing it. It is going to be a great way to get my fiance to play War Machine, you know, asterisks next to that, but whatever. It's War Machine, so I'm excited about it. I find that those, in my opinion, a lot of the games I've been playing, board games that I've been really into recently, have been the here's a bunch of cards in a box LCG style of game. They're really good. They're almost worth the $40. You get a ton of play out of them.
Yep.
Yeah, my wife likes them, and that's just something that we do when we have some downtime or whatever. And so, yeah, I'm excited to use this. I'm trying to see if I can use it as like a gateway into tabletop.
Yeah, for sure. Daniel, I know you have like the Dominion Master set, so I assume you're relatively into this idea, right?
Yeah, I like the idea of it. I've played a lot of Dominion. I love the game. So,
yeah
I'm definitely interested to pick it up, see what's going on with it, and see what I can do to play around.
I'm sure we'll be playing it at the store on Mondays.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, probably. The fact that you can play a faction is the hook.
I like that a lot.
War Machine themed, but you sort of just had...
This is Dominion with different words at the top of the card.
Yeah. The fact that you have faction-specific libraries and such or markets. God damn, I can't remember what that's called. Somebody bail me out of
this. They're called supply piles, I think.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's what I was trying to think of it.
Yeah, this game will have like an army deck and then a reinforcement deck.
Gotcha.
I'm looking. There'll be two different stacks. The reinforcement deck is customizable to your warcaster. Mm-hmm. You'll pick three warcasters.
Oh,
I'm cheating. Yeah. I'm staring at No Quarter right now.
No, that's good. You have the new one, right?
Yeah.
See,
yep.
Bang.
JLF, just bring in the fucking Boy Scout preparedness.
Yep. Yeah. No, I'm ready, man. I'm ready for this. I've been prepped all day.
I like it. Bring in his A game.
All right, yep. Cool. Well, let me get things back on track here, and let's jump to our signature bit.
Bill, your mom's a supply pile.
Oh!
I've been saving that for like 3 minutes now.
You've been waiting.
I had to fit it in somewhere.
To turn my own humor on me.
Yeah.
You have opened Pandora's box, sir. Okay?
Fair.
All right, anyway, BFFs.
Best friends forever!
We got Kador. We got two Kador experts. Jay, go.
Go. All right. My BFFs are, to a Kador player, it might be something you've looked at before. To a newer player or somebody maybe switching factions, it might not be so self-evident. What my BFFs are P-Butcher and the Kayazi Eliminators, the unit of two pretty girls. And you question yourself as to, you know, why are these guys BFFs? Because, you know, typically Butcher will want all the big hardy, you know, all the heavy hitters, all the hardy guys, things like that. And the point that I'll make is that the Kayazi, even though they look like female Black 13th, you know.
Isn't the Black 13th like mostly female?
No, there's one lady.
Oh, there's one lady.
They're of similar proportions total, you know, as far as
the models. they just look female.
They look like tiny, like children.
Right.
But at least they look female.
Right. Yeah. At least they have trench coats and stuff to make them look a little bit bigger, I suppose. These girls have nothing. They have boots. So looking at their card, you see Matt 7 and Pow 9. And they have two attacks. So you're like, well, you know, P Butcher, feed additional damage die, how does this kind of play together? So the math portion of this is they have gang with each other. So that's just plus two attack, plus two damage. So they're really Mat 9, and they're really going to be Pow 11. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Tell me they more.
Yes. No, it gets good. They have combo strike. So they're going to double their Pow, which is 4. So they're going to go from now gang Pow 11 up to Pow 15. Okay. With P Butcher, you can give them Fury. And now people might second guess this because there might be better uses for it, either be it on Jax or say Iron Fang Pikeman or something else. But with Fury, that's how you can get with combo strike gang up to Pow 18. You know, one Mat 9, Pow 18 for each of them.
So the way, pretty good to me.
Yeah, it's not bad, right? They have acrobatics, so they can go jumping over stuff if you need them to. They're mm-hmm. speed 7. They have a lot going on. I mean, I don't know. They just, when you look at a Kador army, you either see Conquest or the Butcher himself, or, you know, there's so many threat variables of guys you don't want to get into melee with. I think unless a person knew it was coming or knew what it's going to get kind of built up to, they might ignore, and they have stealth, so, you know, that works. But you might ignore the two little teenage girls off on the side. I mean, seriously, you know.
No, that's a legit threat to a lot of casters. So that's, yeah. That's Matt 11, POW 18, four dice on a charge under Butcher's feet.
Yep. Yep, that's exactly right. It's Matt 9.
Yeah. Matt 9. What did I say?
It'll stay at Matt 9.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's POW 18, four dice under his feet. They have minus one defense. You're not going to leave it there, but they have duelist, which is plus two defense. So it's really just plus one. So they only go to, you know, they're only defense 16 instead of 17.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the only negative to Fury. So yeah, four dice, POW 18. That comes out to against an armor 18 guy that's 28 damage, that scraps heavies. That scraps Krix heavies, that scraps Kador heavies, that kills a lot of war beasts, and they're 3 points.
Yeah, it's a pretty easy to let go missile if it doesn't pan out or if it just does a nice chunk.
Yep.
Damn, it's charging what it wants to charge too. Shit.
Yep, so yeah. That was kind of the thought. And then, you know, so you wouldn't want to leave it there. You can still kind of have the interaction of upkeep it on them, you know, in the first one or two turns.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's how you start it out there and then just leave it until you actually need it on something else.
Yep, let them hit, then activate P-Butcher and cycle it to somewhere else, you know, or something like that. You know, you can figure it out. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the feet turn, just because of order of activation.
Sure.
He's going to have to either upkeep it on them or just cast it on them. Then feet, then they activate. So you won't be able to get this big hit off and then cycle Blood Fury to something. Or is it Blood Fury that he has or just Fury?
Just Fury.
You're not going to be able to cycle Fury to some other unit in that same turn. But yeah, that's pretty damn potent. One thing I like about it is maybe you're running kind of a wall of Man of War because Man of War seem a lot more viable now that that Kovnik is out, something like that. And these little ladies can just kind of hang out behind that and pretty much just range out and go kill, you know, like you said, kill a heavy. But even if, you know, there's a lot of casters out there that if they can charge something relatively near the caster, hit with their first initial, sidestep to the caster, they might make a mess of it. You know, just even with just their second initial attack, even without gang under the feet and under Fury, might just pop, you know, a big hit on somebody. Or, you know, soften up heavier targets for the rest of your army. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of variety there, and their mat's so high. Even I mean, mat 7's not terrible, even if you don't happen to be able to use gang against, especially against heavy, you know, targets. You don't really need much more than 7.
Right.
It's pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, even if they're doing single swings, they're POW 14 if you're ganging and furied. So
yeah.
Yeah, is that do the math on that? There's a point in armor where it's better to not do the combo of strike.
Yep, and it's 18.
If it's below 18 or at 18, you should be comboing or not comboing.
If it's 18, on average, it doesn't matter which way you go. It's basically the same.
Gotcha.
14 damage per girl, so it's 28 total. Mm-hmm. So if it's less than, you might want to then not combo strike.
You're going to get more on average dice out of it then.
Yep, at any armor less than 18, anything more, 18 or more, it changes. But 18 is kind of like that break-even point for 28 damage, which is typically a lot, you know, a vast majority of heavies.
Yeah, that's pretty hot. And there's field allowance, too?
Yep.
RFA2, which I still need to build my second unit, which... That's going to be so good when I can run both of those.
Is there any tier list that benefits them? Anybody that like speeds them up or gives them AD or something? Do they have AD?
They do not have AD. They're already speed 7, though, so...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, nope, AD.
Give me a second
to
flip through the book here, because...
I could see a tier giving them something.
Epic Arusk tier 3 gives all Kyazi advanced move.
There you go.
There you go. That's not a terrible play. Put a couple units of those in there, and then put in your main assassin unit as well. One thing I really like about models that have, you know, two attacks and sidestep is, especially with a unit that has gang like this, is there's a lot of options for what you know, like Jay talked about, you can combo strike a heavy or combo strike a caster or whatever. But you know, there's a lot of options there with, you know, you move both models, you know, do their charge moves, roll their charge attacks, start doing the sidesteps. So you can maybe charge something, hit it once, sidestep to another target, get it in your melee range, hit that, and then the second girl can do the same thing. So you're, let's say the first target's a heavy and you don't really need gang to hit it, you still get a pretty good charge attack off on it, and then the second target you take your...
stepping into gang.
Right, your second one is stepping into gang. So it kind of, I don't want to say it extends their threat perfectly, because it doesn't. You're losing out some of the efficiency of the unit by doing it this way, but that extra 2 inches could put you onto something really important, like, you know, we'll kind of get into this more in our brick discussion, but like Janissa, right? Like you've charged over the front of the brick, but you're not quite to Janissa. You stab a troll heavy, and then now you're on Janissa with that second attack and the feet and the fury, you know, maybe both between the two girls, you take her out. And that's a trade that you'll make any day of the week. I assume you guys would both trade one unit of Eliminators for a Janissa.
Yeah.
I
would trade two units for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair point. Like a 6-point trade for Janissa, since she's such a linchpin to so many brick type lists, like we're going to discuss later. I mean, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, and those sidesteps, you can move through models too with the acrobatics.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, 2 inches, so you might be able to get through one model, but even then.
But you're still going to be able to like cut corners on a large base even, instead of having to, you know, move around it.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I didn't think about that.
That could certainly help you dig deep to that Janissa.
Yeah.
Or whatever's behind that core that you charged. Yeah. But yeah, it sort of, not only does it extend the depth of their charge on a sidestep, but it also can sort of make a cone of damage that those just two models can kill four that maybe aren't super tight together.
Yep.
Yep. So that's my BFF for this week was,
I like it.
Was P Butcher and his two girls.
Yeah, I like it too, because I think a lot of butcher lists, they see the feet and they think guns or they think big heavy hitters. But having a kind of an elusive little pair like that on a flank or something can be pretty devastating.
Yeah, it's like a smart bomb or something. It's going to seek out that stuff that you need because it can move through and not take free strikes.
It's kind of a
pretty damn high mat.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's kind of like Mage Hunter Assassin level of hard-hittingness, but much more reliable mat.
More reliable, slightly shorter threat, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Threat's considerably shorter, even including the sidesteps, but some potent hitting power under, you know, a lot of Kator casters, including P. Butcher. I mean, you know, that Kator usually can fix hitting shit hard. It's accuracy and getting there, and these two girls do that very well.
Yep.
And speed, too. They're fast.
That's definitely a good little combo.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Dan, go.
Yeah, and that going on that speed is actually going to trail right into my segment, because I'm also going to be talking about the Eliminators and, to a lesser extent, the Assassins as well. I'm actually pairing them with someone you don't see on the table as often, Commander Strakov.
Yes.
I believe I just heard Strakov come up on Muse where they were talking about people want to get him off the heap. Do it, Dan. Get him off the heap.
I've got a few ideas with him. Because, of course, the big thing is, you know, his feet extends the threat by 4 inches. Gives him Pathfinder, which they don't have naturally.
Mm.
Kind of weird.
And now you throw on top of that the fact that Strakov's feet only looks at enemy models in his control area. So you could have... One of my favorite tactics with Eliminators is to run them on a flank and just charge them in when I need them to.
Yeah.
So on Strakov's feet, they could be sitting off in one corner of the board, and suddenly, bam, from 14 inches away, you got these two girls stabbing you in the face.
Yeah, it's similar to the last combo, but you're trading hitting power for crazy threat range, which with acrobatics is, you know, that extra 4 inches is tremendous when you're able to jump over models. Additionally, you have a legitimate backline slash caster threat there for sure.
Yeah, and a lot of people aren't going to see it coming because, you know, normally they can charge 10. You don't usually expect that, and not a lot of people see Strakov, so they don't think about the fact that the feed only looks at the enemy models.
Yeah, you'll definitely gotcha some people with that one.
Yeah, that ten to 14-inch threat range, that's the, for a lot of players, that's that question mark range. You know, everybody can kind of see how far 8 inches is or 6 inches, stuff like that. You know, that's not too bad. But that 10 to 14 is, you know, kind of a big question mark for a lot of people.
It's a lot tougher number to, or yeah, distance to eyeball for sure.
Right.
Yeah, and to add in on that, the assassins also work really well with this too. You can, because they can mini feet for acrobatics, they can still run along the middle, hiding behind some kind of troop wall. I actually want to try boom howlers with them as soon as that full unit comes out,
mm-hmm.
which is, actually they just came out, didn't they?
Today.
They are out, yeah.
Gamer Sanctuary had one today.
The boom howler, the great boom howler drought is over.
Yeah.
Now it's the, John was complaining today on Museum, and he's it's the Pharaoh Bone Grinder drought. Like he's trying to buy like a million units for some wacky tier list or something.
I was trying to find Tara. She's a hot commodity. She's just disappeared from everybody's like dusty shelves.
Yeah. Privateer is like just emptying the stock room now. They're like, thank God we can get rid of all these.
Yeah,
I think I got one for you, Jay, from Muzzy's collection.
Do you? Well, keep it because I put an order in, but. You know, yeah, she's flying off the shelves everywhere as well.
Bill, I want that Terran. So
there you go.
Set that aside for me, buddy.
Too bad. You got.
I think they're overreacting to the whole Terran thing, but this is coming from someone who only plays a little bit of Signar and otherwise can't use her. So
yeah, I guess other two dudes are Signar players. They want.
I got
it.
Some Turbo Dojo for her, but I'll save it for another episode. I got some big fucking ideas that are maybe just big in my head, but. So all right.
I'm not a big fan of hiding casters behind the Colossals anyways. I learned the hard way why you don't do that.
Yeah. That's true. I learned...
Snipe Storm Strider.
I learned that the other day.
Yep.
But, so you were talking about, like, standard Chiazzi's, Dan.
And I'm switching into standard.
Yeah. The full unit. What I was going to say about that, really the only problem with that unit with Chiazzi's is that they're just not, they're not like elite fast.
Yeah.
9.5 inch threat is not, you know, blowing anyone's doors off. But 13.5 is bananas with that unit.
And they're going through everything so you can screen them behind boom howlers if you want, which makes it tougher to see them to get blasts on them, which is one thing they don't like.
Yep. And they don't outrun boom howler naturally anyway.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah, I like that. I like that Boomhauers are the same speed as them. That's a good point. Boomhauers in general in Crix seem, or excuse me, in Kator seem, I don't want to say like under, well, yeah, probably underplayed. I have not seen them much in Kator, and it seems to be something that they could.
I think that's probably because Kator is not lacking in medium-based faction infantry.
They're
yes
lacking
no.
Assets.
Well,
because you get a unit of shock troopers for what's the points on boom howlers?
Nine
for a full unit. So you're getting twice as many models than you would in a unit of shock troopers.
Yeah, but those shock troopers have 8 wounds.
Yeah, they're 8 wounds.
They're a little slower. I'm just saying that, you know, people like to play their faction. They're indicator because they're indicator. In a lot of ways, I think that, you know, boom howlers makes it into Signar because there just isn't something else that fills that slot.
That's fair.
Better or worse, not even in the same neighborhood as boom howlers. You can make arguments about boom howlers better than this faction. You know, it's better than Tharn Ravagers or whatever. But at least there's an argument for them. There's not even a medium base infantry in Signar, is there?
Nope.
No.
So, I mean, it makes sense that they're going to fit in there to screen. But Kator has those things, and people want to play Kator. That's why they play Kator.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if it's about faction purity as much as it's about, like you said, that there are other options. I think, to be honest with you, it's more that for a long time, Winter Guard infantry with Iron Flesh were like the perfect tar pit.
It's all those small base units that between Iron Fang, the Winter Guard, the Death Star, all that kind of stuff, and just Chaozzies on their own without this BFF combo. Once you've spent the points for, say, two of those and the attachments, there's just not a whole lot of room left for, say, a third infantry unit, medium base or not.
Yeah. The other point, too, Man of Wars get outrun, like crazy outrun. I mean, that's a 4-inch difference in the run speed of, like, most of your army and the Boom Howlers. And Kator generally can struggle with getting up the field quick in a lot of cases anyway. So I think that's why you don't see him as much. To be honest with you, as a tar pit at least. Now, the sort of SKU list with a ton of Man of Wars, like the – I think it's P-Butcher tier.
Yeah.
The P-Butcher theme list. That's a different story because the whole army is relatively slow anyway.
And doesn't one of the tiers speed them up on the first turn or something?
Yeah, that's Butcher's tier.
Butcher 1? Yeah, okay. That's a tier I'd like to talk about later on as well because I think that's a good theme list that doesn't get played enough.
Yeah,
I could go on and on about that one.
Let's roll into that one now because Dan introduced me to that by throwing two units of shock troopers down my throat faster than I knew what to do with.
Yeah.
That's a really good, if you're going to run them, that's a really good way to do it because all of a sudden Kator becomes the fastest army around. It's so fast. I mean, you just have shock troopers in your deployment zone turn two. It's fast.
So Dan,
that fast, but
why don't you lay out the requirements and the benefits of that tier real quick if you've got them in front of you?
I do have them in front of me. So Butcher 1, this is his Hard Darkness book tier. You're allowed non-character Jacks, Kossites, Widowmakers, Manowars, Winter Guard infantry, Manhunters, War Dog, Marksman, Yuri, and then Manowar solos.
Okay.
Tier 1, no big deal. Your Manhunter FA increases by +1 for each unit, and the point cost of your Shock Troopers drops by 1, which is already pretty cool because now you got this unit for 8 points instead of 9.
Yep. Yeah, I like that a lot.
You got 2 Manowar units. You get +2 speed for them on your first turn.
Okay.
So suddenly, if you don't think they're going to get shot up, you can run your Manowars up 12 and catch a few people off guard.
Yeah, important note, it's speed, not 2 inches of movement, too, so that's good.
Yeah.
Yep. Tier 3, you get 4 more solos, and that allows you to redeploy solos, which is okay, I guess, but most of the solos you're going to be running in this list are AD anyways, so you're not going to have a lot of room for redeployment.
Okay.
And then Tier 4, his battle group includes 3 or more Warjacks without ranged weapons. And then those Jacks are all getting advanced deploy.
Nice. It was 3 or more?
Yeah.
3 or more Warjacks without ranged weapons in his battle group.
That's kind of brutal.
Yes, no.
The Kordiaks count, right?
Yeah. That's non-character. And they don't have guns. I guess what I'm thinking is, I'm trying to do the math in my head real quick. If your Shock Troopers... Let's say you're going first, you're on the 7-inch line, your Shock Troopers run, they're at the 19-inch line. Let's say you just took like 3 Juggernauts, for example. Your Juggernauts advance deploy, so they're at the 13-inch line, and then they run 8. So they can keep up with the Manowar on turn 1, on your run turn, or whether you go top 1 or bottom 1. After that, though, they're going to get I take that back. After that, everything is speed 4. So,
yeah.
So maybe it's not that bad. Maybe I was a little concerned with them outrunning the Jacks, but once you do the math, maybe that's not the case.
No, in my experience, it's not. I end up usually leaving the Jacks back as the Manowars get up front, and then once they're in shield wall, it's just a tough nut to crack.
Yeah. And you're relevant to scenario because of that extra 4 inches or so of run on that first turn, in my opinion. Where that list would struggle getting jammed by other AD troops or stuff before they could actually get into scenario zones, and that would be the problem with that list if you didn't have the tier bonus.
Yeah, without the tier bonuses, you're losing incursion with that list every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, It might not be a good list in Incursion either way, but it's definitely a bad list in Incursion without the tier.
Well, you're out there 6 inches from the scenario, or 5 inches from the scenario on turn one on Incursion.
Yeah, that's not terrible at all. It's not terrible. Yeah, you got to just make sure that they're running. Like, if you had 2 units of Man of War, you would have to be, like, splitting each set of flags to where no matter which flag disappeared, both of your units could get to within 4 inches of a flag. And you obviously want to get more than, like, a Man of War in there. So maybe it takes Shield Wall out of the equation on that next turn. I'm not sure. It depends on the angles, I guess.
Yeah.
In certain things, like a control zone, take, like, outflank, for an example, you know, these guys are typically, yeah, you're exactly right. You jam them. They can't get in the zone. But under this, now you're looking at trying to push these guys out of that zone.
Yeah, that first turn, they're already in the zone.
They're in it. They're in it. And they're in it pretty far by turn two. And now you have the headache of trying to remove them as opposed to just cutting them off.
Yeah, the bottom of that zone is 18 inches. So your line is an inch into that zone.
Right.
And I think Incursion is the measure for the worst scenario for slow guys.
Yeah,
and sure. You're still in the game on scenario on Incursion with that list because of that tier.
Yeah, Incursion with the flags splitting, which is, you know, what happens 90% of the time for whatever reason.
Right.
Feels like it at least.
I know you're definitely in it though with that list. So that's for me the litmus test of if a list can play scenario or if it's too slow for it. And I don't think that one's got to worry about getting jammed too badly to not be able to contest scenario
right
on turn two.
And then once you're there, just good luck trying to kill it, because, and Jay can attest to this too. I think we were playing one game. I was using this list against your Kane tier list.
Yep.
And
PK
tier, and it was costing you an arm and a leg to try to Thunderbolt my guys out of the zone, because I'm positioning them well enough that they weren't going to move unless you got the perfect angle, and then you can't do damage to them because they're in Shield Wall.
Yep, that's exactly right. Pro tip for any new players or people considering this list, to prevent any slams or any movement shenanigans or pushes anyway. In my case, it was the Gun Mages. When I saw Dan's list, I was like, well, this is going to be, you know, a field day. Dreams come true. I'm going to be pushing Man of War all over the place. Not if they're in two rows, so you can't push the front row anywhere. They just, you know, don't move, and because everybody's base to base. It was an awful nightmare. then it becomes POW 10s versus Armor 21 next round, and it's an awful nightmare.
Yeah, when you said PK'ing theme versus Butcher theme, I just kind of winced. I was like, oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you can make a really early play on scenario somehow, which, it, like we just talked about, probably isn't going to happen because of that plus two speed. I know Marshall likes to run this list a lot. I've seen it on the table a bunch. I don't think I've actually ever played against it. I could be wrong. I remember watching the most boring game in existence, though, which was Gabe was playing Marshall's Butcher 1 theme lists with all the Man of War and shit versus... No, I take that back. It was Marshall playing it. And then Gabe was playing Haley 1. I could be mixing these up. But it was Haley 1 versus that list. And it was like slugs fucking for like 3 hours.
Right.
It's, yeah.
Get out a clock. How's that going 3 hours?
For whatever reason, I mean, I think they might have been playing timed turns, but they weren't playing like, you know...
You got to yell a mercy dice down, even in a casual game.
I yelled dice down on like round 4 or 5, and they just ignore me. I was like, I want to play a game, dudes. Yeah, the worst part about when you got like 3 bros together playing War Machine is someone's got to sit out. But it's really bad when it's that game. You're sitting out watching.
Yeah.
Just fucking kill me.
Yeah, there's nothing exciting going on, and it's going to take forever.
Yeah, it's like, oh, Marshall moved 4 inches up. And Gabe shot at him a bunch. Okay, cool. Next turn, Gabe didn't move. Shot at Marshall some more. Marshall moved 4 inches. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah. That sounds awful.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But that being said, I think this does sound like a kind of a fun list to play. Because it can hit super hard when it finally gets there. Like crazy hard.
Yeah, well, it's sort of once stuff's in the middle, the speed isn't such a drawback. That's right. The big drawback for speed is getting them to the fight.
Yep.
Once they're in there, they're going to take the punch, but they can roll with it because of that shield wall, 21 armor. It doesn't matter that you don't out-threat anything with those 4-inch troops.
Sure, once you're there, now you're playing, you know, Kador's game. You're in the middle, they have to remove you, good luck with the armor, speed becomes irrelevant, and now it's their armor and pow, which is what they want to be able to have a game come down to, because they typically have you at that point.
So what Man of War loadout do you take with that list?
I usually just run 2 units of shock troopers at 50 points.
No demo core in there, you're just going all armor?
Well, it's hard to fit the points in when you're also trying to fit in 3 heavies.
Yeah, well, so does it require specifically shock troops for the tier?
It doesn't specifically require it,
so you could go 1-1 or something?
You could go 1-1. I think usually it's better to do 2 units of shock troopers because that way you cover up both flanks, and then the only way you don't have one flank fall apart is if you're one of the smart player who knows is, hey, you didn't put this unit in the shield wall. I'm going to move to this side, kill all your guys with my Force Evolution Angel, and just make you play keep away now because that's what JVM does.
Well, this became our JVM reference.
Yeah, it became. Well, we are. I knocked that out really early.
That's
Come
right.
On.
I forgot you got that in the intros.
Yeah. I also think the -1 discount is pretty attractive on those guys.
Is the discount only on shock?
It's only on shocks.
Oh, okay, yeah. I can agree then. I'm just what's the hitting power on the shocks compared to demos?
They're 14s, right?
Yeah, they're all POW 14s. The shocks have CMA instead of the potential for a weapon master or a second swing.
Yeah.
But they also have an additional point of base armor.
And well, under Butcher, you're getting Fury anyway.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Without the caster giving them such a huge buff, there's maybe an argument for the demo core, but I don't know. The shock troopers.
You just have POW 17 shock troopers. I guess that's okay.
Yeah. Hey, man. And they have guns.
With CMA.
Yeah, they have the little 4-inch guns, right?
They've got guns, bro.
Hey, it's a 6-inch gun, Bill.
Oh, sorry.
They got that guns you're still never going to use.
That's why you're the Kator expert.
Yeah. I've seen them used, but not super often.
So is the Jack loadout with that 3 Kodiaks, or are we putting Juggernauts in there or what?
Well, if it's me, I just wouldn't fucking play Tier 4, frankly.
Yeah, I'm thinking you stop at Tier 3.
It's Beast 09 and then Tier 2. But or
you
actually,
can't run,
you know,
you can't run
Beast
09, though.
No that, character.
It's Spriggan and Tier 2.
Actually, I usually run Tier 4. My usual Jack loadout is Juggernaut because they're cheap, Kodiak because you need something with Pathfinder, and then I like running the Devastator because here's my armor 25 in the middle of the board. Deal with me.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Clamjacks.
Yeah, I was thinking a Clamjack from Get here is getting when we were talking about worrying about scenario.
Yeah, do the Man of Wars have the same role pretty much?
Yeah, kind of.
Shield Wall? I mean, are they that?
The way I look at it is built-in redundancy, which is never a bad idea.
Yeah, the only thing I think about that is maybe, and again, you know, don't play Kator, so this is, if anyone's wondering, this is Bill and Brian's time to have wildly uninformed opinions. so in my uninformed opinion, it seems like maybe those points could be spent to cover other weaknesses of the list rather than just add more tanking to a list that already has a ton of tanking.
And but, Does the tier off the top say no characters right in it? I'm assuming
it says no character jacks.
Yeah. So you can't do tier 3 with a character. It can't be.
Hey, Bill, whip out your iPhone and fucking make a list. Look at the tier.
Stop being nasty.
Stop being uninformed.
Get enough of that at work.
Well, here, this is the difference. Here you go, guys. This is the difference between the Clam Jack and what role other than the extreme armor that he can play is. Sure, they have CMA, but then the Clam Jack's got Rain Death.
Yeah.
So if you have any high defense stuff, or if it happens to be a caster that's that far up and unprotected, it could happen. But it's really just like the high defense things don't like auto-hitting POW 18 with everybody in. You know, it doesn't go well. Yeah. And then everybody within three is taking POW 9s. It still doesn't go well.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Devastator actually does shore up that one weakness of the list. The Infantry Swarm is not something you want to see with that list.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. Unless it's a not hard-hitting Infantry Swarm, you know. Because there are a lot, there's a decent amount of infantry out there that really can't crack Man of War. It's like, okay, you get your charge attack and you did 2 damage, and now all your non-charge attacks do nothing for the rest of the game, and we just sit here and, like, you know, bounce off each other while your Man of War slowly grind them down. The problem is there's too many things out there like Bane Knights and Bane Thralls, and even shit like Stormblades could crack, you know.
Yeah,
those guys fairly. Yeah,
they're going to take down the 21s, but the Clamjack's 25, isn't it?
Yeah,
25 as long as it's closed. Yeah,
25 is a different fucking neighborhood than 21.
It absolutely is. The thing about the Clamjack is nobody wastes attacks on it. They just either use a power attack to knock it out of a zone, or they use some sort of board control element like gun mages pushing it out or whatever. Now you may hit a list that has nothing like that, and then they're in good shape. I guess that's the reason I would maybe consider not the Clamjack in this list is because the its scenario power is probably easier to mitigate than a full unit of shield walled. I almost said IFP. I meant Man of War shock troopers. But, you know, uninformed opinions. Woo.
Well, if you're going to tier 4 and you're taking 3 jacks anyway, I can certainly see making one of them a Clamjack.
Absolutely. I would do that for sure if I was going to tier 4.
Yeah,
I was playing around with the Jack loadout for the longest time, and this is the one that I've found works the best.
Yeah. I'll second that. I mean, being the one that faced it, it's absolutely terrifying. It's so scary having those 3 Jacks with that many shock troopers that far up, and then you're still being harassed. You know, it's not like, well, maybe they lack guns or, you know, short ranges and things like that, so you can kind of like line stuff up. No, there's manhunters just harassing the hell out of you.
Yeah.
The whole time.
Yeah, and
time.
I've got Widowmakers plinking away your other troops.
It's awful. It's such a headache. You're trying to deal with all that armor. That's so much armor and wounds at that, or damage, you know, throughout the 3 heavies and 8 per shock trooper. But yeah, when you start losing pieces and you're doing absolutely nothing back, you panic mode sets in.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like the Balder tier list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it hits harder, but it has a similar role, I think. I would definitely say it's one of those SKUs that you almost – it's so far skewed towards armor that your average list is just not going to be able to kill – it's not going to be able to keep up in attrition because it can't kill stuff enough. So you almost just immediately grab your control caster and be like, how am I going to try to slow this army down and break it up and flank it and, you know, turn it into that kind of game? Because, I mean, most factions can't crack that.
Yeah, if you're going to drop that list, you need to be prepared to play for scenario. So I think that's something the Kador player needs to consider. For when to drop this list, it better be something that you can win the scenario on, or at least contest the scenario on.
Correct.
Yeah, for sure.
I still think Incursion's probably not your target for this one.
No, I don't.
In
think
a lot
so.
Of cases, it depends on the matchup too. Because if you're facing a lot of low POW guns like a Signar list, I'm still usually pretty confident bringing it.
Yeah, I think you risk going down a point or two at the beginning, but then I don't think you're in too much trouble. I do think that this could be a good list to win a scenario on one of the ones that has a zone you can dominate on your side.
Yep, the zone is key. The flags are rough. Yeah. Zones are key with this.
You're getting up there so far that you're going to have that – I'm trying to think of the names, but there's ones with like horizontal zones where one favors your side and you can score on it. There's probably like 3 that you can score on your side like that. And I think those are probably ones you could park Butcher in with a unit of Man of War in front of him that would be just fine.
That's kind of the kicker. Like
Go ahead, Jay.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say that's sort of the kicker to this too, like the ace up your sleeve is that once you try to solve or figure out all of that, the Warcaster is P. Butcher.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, once you get through everything else, then there's P. Butcher, if that wasn't enough already.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a really good point. He can get involved.
Fucking prize for getting through it.
Yep, yeah. Good job. You survived all that stuff. Enjoy P. Butcher.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I got to the squishy soft center of your list. Oh, wait.
Oh, wait. That's not very squishy or soft.
It's the baddest motherfucker in Imran.
It just, yeah, it just gets progressively worse. Your nightmares continue.
So, why don't we – kind of when we were talking about this segment, you know, we talked about Bill and I being not really Kator players, sort of looking through some Kator stuff and picking out things that we're wondering why they're not hitting the table, or maybe like discuss those sort of – I don't say necessarily like underplayed units, but maybe things that we just are curious why they're not – getting more national attention slash on tables. Even in our local meta, we don't really have a lot of Kator right now. And there's some really nice stuff in this book. So, I mean, Bill, have you thought of anything that maybe is less common that you're wondering why you don't see it?
You know, Manowar Dracoon, I've always liked him, and I don't think I've ever played against him.
Yeah.
I also
actually run him in my Butcher tier list.
Do you? The other guy I like is he's a Jack Marshall and he's also a Man of War. What's his name?
Oh, the
Kovnik.
Iron Fang Kovnik. Now I guess Man of War Kovnik, not the Iron Fang. The Iron Fang Kovnik's the new one.
Yep.
But I liked that guy a lot back in like Reinforcements, where he could pop in with a guy on him.
Oh,
and it would be full. I don't think this guy's stock is going up anytime soon with those new releases coming out.
No, as Mal- far as I think, just utterly replaces this guy for the same amount of points.
Yeah. So I get it for that guy. Although I still like him. He's gonna have a special place in my heart. The only time I ever played Kator in a tournament, I played him.
Yeah, I mean, he is a POW 15 weapon master, but his drive is kind of balls. It's not balls, but it's not great. And, man, he is super slow.
Yeah, well, he's a Man of War.
Yeah. See, the problem is you have a speed 4, defense 11. He's not going to get there in time because he doesn't – even the Butcher tier, he does not get the bonus. It's only the Man of War units.
Right. That's a bummer. That's an oversight in my opinion. They should have put this guy in the tier with the bonus in my opinion for sure.
And that's another reason that he worked out pretty good for Reinforcements, is he could start up the table a ways on that side.
Well, c'est la vie, SR 2012.
Yeah, I'm not saying I missed that shit, but
I don't miss Reinforcements. I think it's a cool, like, hey, let's run a Reinforcements tournament, but I did not like it just being, oh, this game just has 20 more points of models on the table out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like playing 60-point games generally, especially with people forgetting to put the flanks on and stuff. It just was clunky.
Yeah. So what about Man of War Dracoon? He probably gets into play a little bit more with Vlad 3, huh?
Yeah, it sounds like he should to me. I see him – Marshall played him quite a bit in a lot of lists, so I've seen him a decent amount, and I've always felt like he was terrifying.
Did they run – see, I always ran him at 4 points, never five. I never paid the 1 point to get the dismount.
Yeah, I don't usually that seems like a list balancer to me. Like if I've got one extra point, I could see that happening. You know, that's your Feralgeist or your Swamp Gobbers or whatever.
But it's Kator.
I've got
that's
one
the,
extra
that's the
point,
War Dog.
And I don't already have the War Dog.
Oh yeah, it's the War Dog shit. Never mind.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I one of my favorite things about Dragoons is that you got to kill them twice, and sometimes you charge them with something that doesn't have reach or whatever, and then the guy replaces and you can't hit him anymore.
Right.
One thing, though, and I'd have to pull out the base sizes, is if you base-to-base a large base model, oh, like a Dragoon, like Bronzeback charges Dragoon and they get base-to-base. Bronzeback kills Dragoon. You place the dismount. Is that guy in melee range?
Doesn't have to be.
Does not have to be.
I mean, if you put him down
properly. I know it's
properly.
Really rough with the medium base dismount.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you put a medium base on the back medium board, base. As far as – hold on a minute. I'm actually doing this on my desk.
You guys, we're talking about 10 millimeters. That's 10 millimeters is more than a quarter of an inch.
That is a true statement.
So if you stick all the way back to the edge of that large base, it shouldn't be able to reach.
No, you're definitely in reach range, so.
You are? Oh, reach, yeah. Reach?
Reach range.
No, excuse me. Melee range.
You're definitely in melee range?
Yeah, you are.
It's probably you have to deal with a half of an inch.
It's not a quarter.
Oh, it's a half. Yeah, what the hell was I thinking?
I don't know. I don't know, good radio. I just pulled out two bases on my table and witnessed this. So, okay, so let me retract that. Now that I'm now, again, uninformed opinion, now that we've actually talked it out a little, maybe the dismount isn't worth the point. I normally like the fact that you're, like, you know, a non-reach heavy kills your dragoon, which happens, and then you put the little dude and now you can't reach him. That's not the case with this guy, so.
Yeah.
I still might be worth a point, though, to have just an 8-wound armor, you know, death 11, armor 17 guy with reach just standing there being like, all right, kill me twice.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's still, still another high armor swing you got to take.
Yeah.
And he's still a weapon master.
Weapon master with counter charge.
Yeah, so he's a weapon master with counter charge, and he costs less than, significantly less than just a man of war, correct? Like a shock trooper unit of 5 guys is what, 9 points?
9, yeah.
So that's like 1.75-ish each, something like that. I'm not doing the math, but you get it.
Right.
For a point, you get a guy who's better in every way and also gets placed in weird spots that piss your opponent off. So yeah. I think I'd still take the dismount.
Well, and then remember, you only get the counter charge while you're mounted, so.
Yeah, okay, but I mean, POW 14 weapon master dude for a point.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, it still seems good.
They're in a land. That's the war dog. And
that was. That's me. Sorry.
Don't worry about it, buddy. So, all right. Jay and Dan, I mean, how often do you guys put this guy on the table?
I'm trying to think. I used to run him in once in a while. I don't want to say it was pre Vlad 3. I never ran him with Vlad 3. I kind of liked other things with Vlad 3, but no, I've done it a few times. You know, I like him. I have a soft spot. Remember, my other faction is Signar, so I like guns. So I always kind of like find myself drifting towards the Widowmaker marksman or some of the other solos sometimes over him, you know, instead of him. But yeah, no, I mean, I like the counter charge aspect of them. I never went the dismount because I didn't like the speed in the end. I tend to try to like faster things. So while he was mounted, I did, you know, he's really good for sure. I just thought it downgraded so far once he gets knocked off.
Yeah.
What about you? Yeah, kind of to build on Jay's points there. I kind of go the same reasoning. Usually I'll find better things for the points in my solo slots. I'll run him in Butcher Tier because that's actually something with speed. I like running him with Strakov for the same reason I was talking about the Eliminators, where you can keep him on a flank and suddenly you have this bananas 16-inch threat on a charge.
He seems like everything Strakov wants out of a solo.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Mm-hmm.
16 inches. Weapon master.
Okay, so here's another question sort of based on that. Is it because Fenris exists for another point?
Yeah.
Fenris is pretty bonkers.
Yeah.
Fenris is there. If you're running Vlad 3, the Ulan solo is there, which adds a lot. If you're taking Ulans, it does. You know, he makes an argument for being in the list. Things like that, yeah.
Yeah, Fenris seems the sexier option for sure.
Oh, yeah. No, he definitely is. Sure. But I don't think nobody else has 3 mounted solos, all 4 or 5 points.
We've mentioned Vlad 3 a bunch of times here. That's just a caster that I love. When that guy came out, I was just like, oh my god, he's going to flashing blade the entire universe and be like armor 30 and then just go sprint in to engage your caster and say double middle fingers. Like I was super excited about that guy. And I've only seen him on the table a few times. Again, it's sort of more because of a local Kador deficiency rather than that he's not good. Like, I don't think that's the case at all. I just don't think a lot of people are playing Kator locally, which is a bummer. I would love – I'm hoping at, like, some convention I get to play against, like, the all the horses lists. That list seems amazing.
Yep. It is a lot of fun to play. One of the funnest lists that I – with Kator that I have. Everybody kind of likes Valachev with Nis. I like Valachev with Nis with Dash.
Yeah.
That is pretty sexy.
It's yeah, really so good. Fun, you know, to just kind of maybe engage a few of them, or you kind of get that – try to set up to where you get that definitive, you know, this is the battle line where the two armies kind of meet. And then you put Dash up, and then all the Nis run around you. And, yeah, middle fingers to free strikes, and it's awful.
We definitely enjoy the middle fingers.
Sure.
As an army theme, that's a – I'm a big fan.
Your mom enjoys the middle fingers.
Oh. Bill right. With the comeback.
Fair.
If we were to jump back to a BFF, Vlad with Nis with Valachev is one of my asterisk BFFs.
Fuck yeah, man. That sounds awesome. Just in the vacuum of Nis and Valachev, I mean, obviously it's super common, so it's, you know, kind of a duh thing, but then the additional synergy with Quicken is super good. They're just
with
a mod. They're like one of those. Sorry, I'm on Dash. They're one of those modules that is so good just on its own, and then you start adding caster support, and they go just crazy.
Yep.
So that
because you get Dash of Vlad 3, pick your Iron Flesh caster.
Yep.
I like running that combo with a Rusk, so now they've got Iron Flesh and Super Tough.
Yep. Yeah, weren't you making the joke earlier, Jay, about how?
That's right. I failed on my joke.
BFF.
Yeah.
Just so you know, I failed on my joke, but yeah, I forgot to. I got all wrapped up in my girls, the Kazi Eliminators. But yeah, PI Rusk is, just in case you're keeping track, is everybody's BFF. Yep. He helps everything you want. Conquest or Beast 09 or Behemoth to be, you know, speed 6, hit harder, anything, he can do that for you. If you're not a weapon master, you are now. He just does everything. If you're not tough, guess what? Enjoy super tough for a round.
Yeah.
You know, you have a low mat, we'll improve your mat. It's just he can help everything. So that would be a recommendation, you know, in all seriousness, not just like joking around about him being everybody's BFF. If you're a newer Kator player, he's a really good one to get a grasp of. Get some games in with him because he just solves so many problems. He makes, you know, if you're only going to take that one jack, he makes that one jack better. He makes your infantry better. If you don't have Pathfinder, you're going to have a bad day against him.
I was going to say, fucking Inhospitable Ground is one of those things people don't talk about enough. That spell is a fucking kick in the dick.
Sure, if you're not ready for it, right, yep. If, you know, if you're not ready for it, though, or you figured, you know, I don't need Pathfinder today, or you drop a list not knowing that he's got that or something like that, you are in such trouble.
Again, yeah, it's a matchup monster for sure, yeah, that spell. There are just certain matchups where it's just like almost an auto win, it feels like. It's that good.
Yeah, he's one of those casters that if he's on the table, it forces their opponent to take a list that has Pathfinder if they have... at least a lot of Pathfinder. If they
you
have
better hope it's
a switch.
You better hope it's a list that has Pathfinder and it's a list that can deal with a ton of tough infantry being shoved in your face that hit crazy hard. And you know, yeah, I mean, he projects a myriad of problems at you. Like you don't get like, hey, here's a question. Can you answer it? It's like here's three separate questions. Can you answer all three of these? And make this a game. You know,
sure. And in the common things of the army fit, he's sort of plug and play. You know, if you want the Death Star, he can give you the Death Star. If you know, and then make your Iron Fang super tough and weapon masters. And now Conquest is speed 6. It's just never ending. The things he can do.
I'm going to mention Great Bears because
exactly.
Jay mentioned, oh, you don't have weapon master, you have it now. Oh, you already have weapon master. Now you're even better.
Nope.
I remember one particular game using Pia Rusk, put Battle Lust on Great Bears, and watch them tear apart a Colossal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's – when you start doubling down on Weapon Master and you get into those Armor 19 and 20 heavies, you got like three guys each with two attacks. You're like, cool, I'm projected to do 50-something damage to you. I mean, it's just – the math, until you do the math, you don't necessarily realize like how ridiculously potent it is. But when you have extra attacks and extra dice, it's
it's good.
But to go back to a model that doesn't see a lot of play necessarily, although, again, I think it's sort of a 50-50 model. I think it gets played a decent amount. That Dracoon with all of those things is amazing. I mean,
yeah.
When you can make – Kador makes shit hit super hard, right? I kind of back in the day when I played Scorn – Zal was sort of this way. Zal can make anything truck anything else. So what is fast? What has like long threat range or reach? Or, you know, that's the kind of stuff I was looking for when I make my list sometimes. It's just I need to get there with something and it needs to hit crazy hard, which the list already does. So what has the speed to get there? And that's where I think maybe some of these cav solos and things like that with any of the, you know, I don't say any of the casters, but a lot of Kador casters just turn them to 11.
I think what you're trying to say is that he takes maybe some models that have one glaring deficiency and fixes it and then lets them shine.
I guess. I mean, I don't know if the Draken really has a deficiency. I mean, it's really hard to shoot off the table. It's speed 7, so it's got a 12-inch threat. It's mat 8, so you're not missing very often.
10 on the charge.
Yeah,
10 on the charge. Right. Pal 14 Weapon Master, you know. I don't know
why I never see this guy.
Frankly, that guy and Fenris are fucking terrifying. Like when you see Fenris out on a flank, you're like, great. There's this crazy abomination dude who I have to go jam with infantry somehow. Hope they don't break. And then because if
watch him kill all of them.
Watch him berserk every one of them.
Right. So you're like, here's two reach dudes per turn to eat. There you go, Fenris. You keep giving them little happy meals. You don't want to give them like the full family size, you know. But he's a problem for a lot of us to deal with. He is a little easier to shoot off the table, though, than the Dracoon. And that's where I think the Dracoon, maybe the advantage is there. Fenris is legitimately fairly fragile.
I feel like almost all the Cav solos are underplayed and good.
It's probably a decent blanket statement.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
they're hard to play. Cav are hard to play. It's hard to get those points back.
Yeah, people don't know Cav rules either.
That's true. You see that a lot too. Not playing a Cav, right?
Well, people are getting them down now that the casters are coming on horses too.
Yeah, that's fair.
Maybe they'll start a resurgence.
I've started to see a lot more people remembering that ride by attack is a thing now that we've got all these Cav casters out.
Yep.
Oh God, it's so good.
It is really good.
God, Kray being like immune to free strikes and having ride by attacks. Ugh. God, I love Kray so much. I need to get back to playing that guy.
Let's not digress back to beta.
Yeah. Knock it off.
Hey, bro, let's talk about some Signar. In our game Signar, Fohawk, Signar. So, anyway.
JVM.
Yeah, right, JVM. So, what besides our buddy, the Dracoon, I guess maybe I should pull something out of this list since Bill.
Yeah, what was your list?
Well, I did actually want to talk about Doom Reavers, but the actual unit Doom Reavers, and not in the Butcher tier necessarily, the Butcher 2 tier list that you do send to – you tend to see that at conventions, you know, whatever is like 36 Doom Reavers and
a ton, yeah.
Or whatever, or a couple Jacks. That list seems awesome and really fun to play, but I'm talking about more in other lists. Strakhov being a great example, their threat range with Strakhov is bananas. I know maybe I guess maybe the argument against them is that they are a little too easy shot off the table.
Why don't we ask our Kador experts?
Yeah.
No, they are. I know a lot of guys will tend to put them out front and run them, and I've never been a big fan at that. I know the Berserk can have issues, you know, the attachment kind of solves that if you can keep him alive or anything. That's where, you know, you don't want him to be singled out and killed because they don't have to do their berserk attack if he's around. But
yeah.
I've always liked them better as the second wave, and And for whatever reason, I'm outnumbered in the world of KDOR players. Everybody puts them out front, maybe, you know, the 80 or whatever, but they just never – yeah, so they just run them out there and they get blown up and
– Well, is part of that because they're abominations? You don't want them in the middle of your mess?
Yeah.
You don't want to try and put a 3-inch bubble around a unit that's in the middle of your army?
But it isn't –
Aren't there a few casters that make like IFP and stuff fearless, or just
there's
make?
Got it. I'm sure there is.
Dudes
yeah, fearless. There's all kinds of things that have fearless, or you know, at least if not permanent, you know, short
term
fearless.
Ability to gain it, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess
obligatory Kovnik Joe drop.
Right, and then they can play. Can they play Rupert, or can they only play Saxon? They only play
no
Saxon.
No Rupert.
Yeah. Okay.
No Rupert. He hates us.
All right. Well, yeah.
You'd be
that,
too good with us.
That could be a problem, I guess, depending on your list composition. Getting, I will say this: like, if you're ever forcing yourself to take command checks, you are putting an entire game at risk.
Yeah.
I've done
sure.
it. I've done it running like, you know, Deathjack advanced deploys, Styxus Raiders advanced deploy, and then when they run, somehow I manage to like, whoops, got within 3 inches, and that unit's broken, and they're like way the fuck out there now. Broken, you know, in front of my whole army, and my opponent's like, "Oh, cool! Now you're not jamming me." You know, their sort of function goes away. So you need a delivery system, I guess, is what you're saying, of some kind. You have to get them there with what, 2 or 3 models alive before they earn their points back, probably.
Yeah, probably about that. Depending on what you're hitting, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just wanted to, you know, kind of maybe expand a little bit about just my thought just from a second ago of making them a second wave. I'd rather – I can control my movement a little bit better. You know, maybe slams and things like that cause issues or TK and stuff. But if you create that bubble, I think the payoff of being cognizant of keeping people away from them is a better payoff down the road, you know, in rounds 3 and on. As opposed to just 13, 14 tough doesn't live.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
They're a glass cannon for sure. And if you have the luxury of making them your second wave or engaging on your terms, sure, that's awesome. I think that's part of the balance in them is that they're abominations.
Yep, it's definitely tricky. But I think if you can kind of get it, the movement and placement of your models down, the payoff is far greater than just delivering one of them or something, and everybody else. I always had them explode, so I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah.
Now, see, here's where I'm going to differ on you, Jay, because
sure.
I actually really like the Doom Reavers. If you want to use them as a second wave, I like the idea of running them on a flank, because it's like, okay, now your opponent says, oh, if I want to deal with them, I have to send a chunk of my army this way.
Yeah.
And then it also helps if you have a way to support them, which seems a little bit off base because, you know, they're spell ward, so you can't throw iron flesh on them or something like that. But then you think of casters like P. Sorsha, who can use Fog of Ward. Suddenly now they're defense 15, which is a little bit harder to hit.
Yeah, I like them a lot with P. Sorsha. I was going to mention that as well, that in my sort of minor Kator dojoing, that always seemed good to me.
I think
that he's really good.
Sorsha is good.
Well, I think for them particularly, she fixes any kind of issues with Matt, with her feet, or with stationarying the unit you're trying to charge. And in addition to that, she also has Fog of War, as Dan mentioned, which is a big deal. 15 is way better against guns than 13.
Yeah.
And Sorsha's another one of those casters where you kind of scratch your head and say, why aren't people playing her?
Yeah.
What to do?
Elaborate on
that.
Tell us what people are missing with that caster.
I'm trying to figure it out too, because she has a bonkers feat. You can use it as an assassination tactic. You freeze their caster. Suddenly you're dropping 2 mortar shells, 2 behemoth shells, which are going to be boosted, and whatever else you feel like throwing at them. Or, hey, here's a troop-heavy army that I freeze, and they can't move, and they can't do anything for an entire turn.
Yeah, that's one of those like Mark 1 feats where it's like, how the fuck is this still in the game feats?
And the line of sight of that.
What it used to be, but still.
Yeah, put her on a hill. Fuck it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Sorsha on a hill. It's a nightmare.
like even Jake was saying, here we go name dropping again. I was talking to him yesterday about this. He mentioned on his bonus photo, he's Sorcerer's one of the casters he's terrified to face because she freezes your shit.
Yeah, Legion does not like having their high defense shtick on their angels taken away from them. Yeah. That's you know, you can't knock angels down, so it's really hard to reduce their defense. But that is a legitimate way to do it and blow them off the table because their defense is the only thing keeping them from dying. Their armor blows.
Yeah, that's probably why he's
even with tenacity,
they're
only 18s and bombards can crack that.
You were saying that JVM is going to play Peace Orsha.
I think that he said that's his first Kador caster, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't believe him.
Here's the thing about JVM and Kador is, does faction have speed 4 heavies? Or no, sorry, let me rephrase this. Does faction not have speed 6 or higher heavies? Will not play. And that's pretty much it.
I saw him win a tournament with Peace Striker once.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. Once.
You're time warping everyone right now.
Yeah.
There was a Jake before he played Legion?
No, he probably still played
Legion. This is in Mark II.
This is in Mark II?
This is in Mark II. What
kind of tournament was it?
It was a Mangle Metal tournament. Him and Chuck swapped lists. So nice. Chuck was running Abby, and JVM was running like Peace Striker, like Rowdy, Centurion, maybe one other heavy.
Nice. Oh, Jake, I would love if you played Signar.
All right, guys. Well, are we getting close to? Do you think we covered enough Kador to make the masses happy?
I think we got a pretty good start.
The only thing I've just been flipping through the cards while we've been talking that I wanted to briefly touch on and see if you guys have tried it yet. I think Dan has. I think I've seen it on the table. But the newest Clamjack, the Demolisher, that guy seems – oh, he seems really good.
Yep, he does. I've been, you know, Signar all day, every day for a little while now. But, he does seem incredibly good.
I definitely was thinking about picking up like just a 150 point list in Kador with a couple of those guys and what's his name with the fucking out of activation
Harkovich.
Shooting? Yeah, Harkovich.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he gets around their greatest weakness, which they open up when they shoot.
Right.
So suddenly you have this, it's only a range 8 gun and they're armor 17 now. GG guys.
Yeah.
But wait, broadside.
Yeah, broadside is definitely hot shit with them.
I'm
a big shoot,
fan.
Then activate and close.
Like, girded is a rule that on a guy that's that high armor, I don't know, man. It seems really damn good.
Mm-hmm.
You're just like, hey, I just clump 6 Kayazi around this guy. Unless your opponent has, like, fire AoEs or bile thralls or something, that's a pretty damn good way to keep a lot of guys alive.
Yeah.
You know, he's just sort of like a... He's like a stop in like a relay race. Like as they run up the table, they like stop and clump around him for a turn, and then they go take off past him, and then he hangs out in the zone or whatever. But and then just like the other one, he also deals with high defense infantry really well. But he actually his guns can legitimately if for some reason he can't melee or doesn't want to melee, his guns actually hit reasonably hard.
Oh yeah, I mean POW 15 AOE 4.
Yeah, I mean, the range is tiny, but...
The range is tiny, but it just kind of goes back to that, you know, I don't know, Gorman, like, you know, if you just get close enough, you auto-hit with the blast, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm going to mention Peace Orsha again. Hey, look, you freeze. Now my Rat 4 doesn't matter.
Right, right. In a faction full of stationary type stuff, right?
Yeah.
Which I know I've done that to Brian before, and that didn't even involve Sorcia's feet. I believe I went for a Hail Mary when you were still playing Scar, and I think I hit the 14 I needed to hit you on the hill.
Shocking. Shocking, yep. A Hail Mary against Scar. Never heard of such things.
Well, and the funny part about it was he had 2 Clamjacks, I believe, and they both like bulldozed their way through. They bulldozed like a path to my caster. This like intricate fucking bulldoze path to like... It took Dan like 8 minutes to pull it off, and he finally clears this path, and I'm like, oh, shit, here it comes. And then Dan's like, 14! Gotcha, fuck off. But hey.
Burrow Dryer's dice?
Yeah, you probably...
No, I'm pretty sure those were mine. those are one of the times where my dice took a broken swing. Yeah. Which my dice have streaks. They're either really good or really bad.
No.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. So
old Dan dice.
So what else? I guess that's it for me as far as Kator stuff. I think like we did a nice generalist sort of sweep of some interesting things. I don't have anything else really that's a burning desire to.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
No, we might touch on a little. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have too. I mean, those are some really good key points. You know, to get people rolling with them if they were interested or looking to get to them, and we'll touch on them a little bit here. With some of their...
Yeah, I think they'll come up in the second half here.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about bricks, so I mean, we're going to kind of come back to them for sure.
Right. All right, so like we talked about at the top of the show, there's a... I don't want to say an epidemic, but around our meta anyway, and actually, you know what, before I even say any of that, this is a subject that was brought up by one of our local guys.
Our buddy Michael Vesnick, he's one of the Fresh Coast gamer guys from up in Flint. Plays with Jay quite often. He was asking us on Facebook if we could talk about how to beat the brick. And he was talking the factions he plays, although we'll probably touch on a lot of factions. He plays Legion, he plays Scorn, he plays Kator, I believe.
Yep.
And he's been having a lot of frustration with Bill McKibben just like pushing his shit in with the P-Madrak Ultra Brick. And that's a list that Muse on Minis made popular. It's P-Madrak. It kind of centers around P-Madrak, a bunch of beasts, like three or four heavies, a Janissa wall in front of it, Surefoot, and you just have this super tight cluster of war beasts, and there's a Creel Stone, and if the scenario doesn't force it apart, it is an incredible bitch to deal with.
Yeah, there's a couple guys in our meta that are wearing this one out. Thanks, Chad.
Yeah. I actually think, if I recall correctly, and I could be wrong, but I believe John and Chad sort of wrote that list together for John to just fuck around with in some tournament where he borrowed Chad's trolls or something. But anyway.
So if the troll guys are breaking out their pens and paper, I think the Earthborn Animus is in there as well.
Yeah, it
is.
Definitely, because then you get the extra armor buff from the wall.
Yeah.
And if they're troll guys, they already fucking know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they already played the list probably, but it's Mulg, Earthborn, Mauler.
Maybe you mix around with what kind of utility lights in there. I've seen pyre and I've seen lightning.
Yep. And kind of the shtick of it is the list basically, and again, we're rehashing kind of Muse on Minis here, but just in case you don't know what this list does, the shtick of it is that you jam the list forward. There's a wall in front of the front three beasts. Madrak's directly behind with Surefoot. So effectively, if you're trying to shoot at them, a lot of the beasts are like Def 16, and they're at +4 armor because of the Creel Stone and the Animus. They're extremely tough not to crack. And then if you've got a lot of infantry that aren't crazy high defense, like if you've got a lot of Def 15 or under infantry, Madrak will break the brick open and feet, and then cast Carnage, and then you know Mulg will spend one fury to kill 10 Iron Fang pikemen. And that's not an exaggeration. I like saw it happen on the table. Yes. It's very powerful. I think it was like 10 Iron Fang pikemen, 2 Widowmakers, and like 2 Nis or something.
There was no Nis. Yeah, it was still like 15 warrior models.
Yeah. He had one fury on him at the end of it.
Yo.
Between his initials and all the free attacks, and I mean, and Carnage putting him up to mat 9. You know, rolling forward.
Let me stop you for a second. Before we get too far down the rabbit hole on this specific brick, maybe we should define bricks and maybe talk about a few different popular bricks besides the one that that inspired Mike to ask us about this.
Yeah, that's a good call.
So what other popular bricks are there? There's a Xerxes brick. Maybe you can give us some detail on that.
Xerxes, it's a little different. It's more of a traditional brick. Instead of having the Creel Stone aura that you're trying to hang out inside of, you're trying to hang out mostly inside of Xerxes, either command range or control area, depending on the effect. He's got martial discipline in his command range, which allows all the medium base Trotty and RQRI and now the Incendiary to move through each other freely. And you typically run a Kreia or two, or maybe Kreia Shaman, and then the Shaman's casting the Kreia Animus. The Kreia Animus is a +2/+2, you know, defense and armor against shooting. Between that, Defender's Ward, shield wall, the Tyrant Commander, and Xerxes giving them plus two, the units, the various units plus two movement. You just have this nice compact little group of extremely high armor, medium base, you know, eight wound guys who hit pretty hard. It's kind of like the Butcher list, but it's more has to stay fairly compact together.
Yeah.
And it's probably, you couldn't make the argument it's more resilient to shooting than the Butcher Brick.
Yeah, the defense numbers are a little bit higher than the Butcher Brick.
Yeah, I mean, those Citrati can be armor 24 with the Kray Animus against shooting, which is effectively just don't bother.
Right, and the Man of Wars, I don't really see them ever getting very high unless there's a wall already on the table for you.
Well, no, I'm talking about armor. They get up to armor 24, and then their defense goes from 12 to 14, which is very good against guns for medium-based. And, right. And yeah, like, Man of War only 11. You know, 90% of the time. So yeah. Just a better unit or a better anti-shooting brick. But the offensive output's not as good. But it's close because Xerxes has a similar spell list to Butcher, et cetera.
And a feat similar to Butcher's.
Yes. Melee only, which makes it even more brick-like because his control area is very small.
Right.
So that's a popular one. And then, you know, your beast loadout besides the Kraya, maybe you run a couple heavies if you want. But it's certainly... Yeah, Tiberian probably goes in there very well. Tiberian's a nice anchor that you can sort of stack bases around to make sure that your brick doesn't get picked apart by TK and
Mitten. Yeah, you can definitely count on him holding a spot for your brick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any other like common like this is a net deck list brick?
Mort Nebra has one, doesn't she?
I don't know if I would call it a brick because it doesn't really stack defensively so much. It's certainly a lot of large bases.
Yeah, it's kind of a ball of warjacks moving up the table. But yeah, it's not relying on stacking armor sort of centrally located. Like, and it can split up if she needs to go like center for scenario. It doesn't drastically reduce the power of the list. I mean, her control area is 14.
So let's say for the purposes of this discussion, a brick is something that's got a pretty small footprint, high defense and armor, usually achieved by a daisy chain of spells, animi, and other effects.
Not necessarily high defense, but almost always
at least high armor.
Yeah, because I was going to mention Baldur 2 is another very good bricker.
Yeah.
With Roots of the Earth and his feet saying... Now everything has roots, everything has extra armor, nothing can move, which is another signature of a lot of bricks.
Yeah, that one doesn't necessarily fall to the same small footprint either. That one can spread out a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely can spread out.
Yeah, there's still Surefoot's still in there, right?
Not Surefoot.
He has something like Surefoot,
the
though.
Roots
he's
of
got
Earth.
Rock Roots Wall, of the he's got Roots of the Earth, which is just plus three armor and you can't move me.
So a lot of similar elements.
Yeah. Yeah, his beat gives that to everything, like spell to everything in his control area, which is super good.
Yeah.
So,
all right. So, what are some ways that we can pick apart bricks like this? Do you think you need to build it into a list? You need to have this is my list for beaten bricks, or is it more in playstyle, or is it somewhere in between?
You know, just kind of kick this off. I don't think you have to build a specific anti-brick list like you would for some maybe other casters or anything like that. I don't think that falls into that same category. I think it's more of you knowing how to react when you come up against it, how you're going to move against it, just kind of how with the list that you created what you're going to do, but not tailor make it towards beating a brick.
Right. So anybody else have anything to add to that?
I agree. I kind of half agree. I think it depends on your faction. I think some factions have to be a little more prepared. And I also think that there's sort of there's a fork in the road there with how you're going to play against the brick as far as just list matchup, not necessarily, play on the table, but the pregame, what list you're picking is, are you going to crack the nut or are you going to board control the hell out of it?
That's fair.
And pick it apart.
So rather than saying it falls somewhere in between, you're saying by your list selection or the scenario, you can decide if you're going to try and break the brick or beat it by some other trickery.
Yeah, yeah. I also think, you know, again, depending on the faction, like I look at as Signar, and I'm more worried about bricks in Signar than I ever was as a Krix player or a Scorn player, because those factions hit super hard, and Signar does not necessarily hit that hard. And when you, if your faction or your lists are making most of their money by range attacks, you are going to have some issues with bricks. You got to start about a list.
Yeah, I've had the same issues with Rhett.
Yeah.
They have a hard time with a lot of brick lists unless you're really prepared.
And I think that argument that you just made about Krix versus Signar sort of falls into the my list needs to be built for it. But with Krix, it's sort of already done because so much of what you would be taking anyway is built for breaking bricks.
Yeah, and there's a lot of control elements in Krix also, like built-in control that is just common in lists, pistol wraiths and things like Gorman, you know, is in a lot of lists, stuff like that. A lot of the Krix feats are pretty control-y in addition to being offensively powerful because, you know, Krix feats are bananas.
Right. All right, so I think we just talked about a few different kinds of bricks, and we laid out a few different paths we can go down now about how to beat it. Off the top of my head, I think that your options are to just split the brick in half. If you want to just go head to head with it and try and say, you know, I'm going to out damage the armor stacking that you're doing, or we can talk about enveloping the brick and maybe getting to the, usually there's at least a little bit of a soft backfield that's supporting the brick, with envelopment, or beating it on scenario, because that's usually a drawback of bricks is a small footprint or slow movement or both.
Yeah, forcing them to split themselves because the scenario is dictating it, not because necessarily even anything you're...
Right.
Other than playing for scenario, you're not doing anything to split it, but that's enough in some scenarios.
I think in a lot of scenarios it's like that.
Yeah, the counterpoint to that is about probably half the scenarios don't really force the brick to split too much. And those are going to be the ones where you really need to bring your A game to deal with it.
I think that's a decision you need to make before you even drop a list is look at the table and see if that brick, if he brings his brick, is he going to have to split it? And then that probably is going to tell you he's not going to bring his brick.
That's very well possible. Absolutely.
So that might be how you beat the brick is don't have to play against it because it's not a good scenario for a brick.
That's true. So 50% of the time though, you're going to have to play it.
All right, so that comes down to, obviously scenario is still a possibility on a lot of, I wouldn't say just half of them, the scenario doesn't matter because it's a brick. But
sure. That's
then,
a general question for sure.
Right, so let's maybe start with ideas for cracking through the brick. If you just say, you know what, fuck you, I'm not gonna dance around, I'm just going to kill the stuff in your brick, I don't care how high you stack those defensive stats. What kind of stuff is going to help us there? I think we need to focus on what's making the brick tick. There's usually some core spells or animi at the middle of that brick that's running it. So, let's maybe take apart what makes some of those bricks tick.
Okay. Yeah, I would think just before we even dive into that, because if you think about a game, that's kind of, you know, movement is your – sort of one of your main phases, especially early on when the game starts and you see that brick drop, and you see where it is. Typically, you know, not every time, but a lot of times it's right in the middle of the field.
Yep.
It's right on the line, and it's basically a rectangle, and it's, you know, and it's coming. One of the things that I do before we start diving in how to kind of pull it apart is that I start... Don't line up head on into it. You don't want to be in a head on collision with this thing at midfield. It's not, you're going to lose. So if that's what you're doing, stop, because it's not going to work. So the first thing I do is either deploy off center or have some speedier things, or at least my fastest things out to a side in scenario, and everything will come into a play. But what you want to do is start turning the brick. Don't let them be able to come at you in a straight line. Start making them go at an angle or start to veer. Make it difficult for the other guy. That make him make some decisions as to how he's going to move and place it. Because everything, the spells that he's creating this brick with, all have ranges. And he's got to be on point with his model placement to make it work.
I think that's a really good point, and especially, yeah. You know, the one I have the most experience with is the troll brick. having played it myself several times, that you don't have a lot of distance. You're limited by how far your Janissa can move and drop a wall. And you need to like estimate where your guys are moving and stuff so that you can be, because Janissa's not going to be on the front line putting that wall out there. She needs to move after that front line of beasts and then drop the wall. And when you make people start rotating that, they're taking away a lot of their forward movement to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, one of the biggest weaknesses of the brick is the fact that since you're usually got that small footprint, you can be outmaneuvered really easily, and that's one of the easiest ways to crack it.
Yeah, this is starting to go down the envelopment path, so let's go that way first.
Okay.
So we're talking things with high speed that are going to get around the outside. So for, and I could, like I said, the troll brick is the one most familiar to me. You can start to get around the sides to the backfield and start hitting the stone and just taking two armor off the top, period. Getting cracks at their caster and maybe getting a peek at Janissa from the side with your you know, cav unit that you have out on the flank, or those Mage Hunter Assassins, or if you have an ambush unit. Those are all really, really hard to deal with from the side.
I think to talk about the Ultra Brick again, the Madrak list, and actually this, I think we don't necessarily have to talk about the Madrak list. We can talk about any of the Troll Beast Bricks, or really even the Infantry Bricks, because they're all predicated on Janissa and the stone. And I think Janissa probably is, if you're flanking with a ranged unit, Janissa might be a more viable option to kill because she's just one model. And yeah, she's not really crazy high armor, surprisingly. Even with the stone, she's not bananas.
She's 15 on the card, I believe.
Yeah, so, you know, you start hitting her. Like, if I have Tempest Blazers and they're around the corner putting brutal shots in her and then just dancing back out of range, you're putting your opponent in a position where they've got to make a decision of, do I split the brick now, pop the feet, and do my thing? Or do I just continue to hope that I can protect Janissa with, you know, other medium bases in the way and things like that? And those linchpin pieces, the Tyrant Commander, the Janissas, the Kreias, those are all somewhat vulnerable, maybe not the Kreia as much, to being picked out by things like Ghost Shot, Phantom Hunter, maybe just as a situation where you can kill one model that's blocking line of sight and open like one little lane. You know, you got to look for those opportunities to get Janissa. And if you got to make a bad trade, go make a bad trade. Like, it's perfectly acceptable to go get her,
because it's usually worth it in the end.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm borderline. I'll trade more than double her points to get her out of that list.
Yeah. That's what makes it tick.
It absolutely is. Yeah. You're taking away plus two armor from all the heavies that are behind the wall. You're taking away their ability to basically be immune to non-reach infantry, which is a big deal. And you're also taking away plus four defense against shooting. So if you think of all that stuff, is that worth trading like 8 or 9 points of your list for, or something like that? Probably.
So yeah, if you're paying attention to what, you know, we're kind of discussing about, don't go throw your army at the Earthborn up front, things like that. We're saying, you know, target the Creel Stone, target Janissa, get around to the sides, basically get out of the brick's way until you can start breaking it down, you know, piece by piece. You got to deal with the support staff first. Don't start with the heavies up front, or because it's not going to work.
That's why they're out front. It's because they're what they want you to deal with first.
Yep, waste your time doing nothing.
So, and as far as envelopment goes, I've used stuff like, you know, like Rangers and Signar. They're not like cavalry fast, but they're speed 7 and they have AD. That's not a bad unit to just say, well, you know, normally Rangers kind of run up the middle and go run out and, like, they'll hang out in a forest or something, and one guy will go target, you know, mark the target every turn. Well, instead, you know, you run them up the flank and get around the side of that brick a little bit and see what you can do with them. Because it's not like your Rangers are doing much damage to the Satrati out front. And it's not like you probably need the plus two to hit that often necessarily. But what you definitely need is some dead support models. And if they can do that, or even just run to engage the Creel Stone in a lot of ways, can be a pain in the ass for the troll player. Because then they're trying to continue to move the brick forward onto the scenario, the Stone can potentially be lagging behind now, and that's a problem.
Yeah, because suddenly there's one less armor buff on the field, and
yeah,
you can start picking apart the brick from there.
So even though, I guess what I'm saying is, even though like speed 6 units, speed 6 plus units aren't necessarily seen as like the fastest thing. Like I don't look at like Bane Knights and go like, oh my god, Bane Knights are the fastest thing on the planet. But between the fact that they have Ghostwalk and they're speed 6 and they do have Vengeance in case your opponent's dumb enough to kill one, you know, flank with that. If you've got infantry mobs, don't run them right down the middle. Flank them. Make them pick a direction that they have to attack in. And with the Madrek brick especially, when the feat gets popped and Carnage gets cast and, you know, holy shit, Mulg just killed half an army, make it be one of your infantry units, not both. Like, make a gap. You know, right. Separate them right flank, left flank, or, you know, however the table dictates.
With a little kind of jump back to our Arcador discussion, I would say, you know, speed 6, advanced deploy Widowmakers work. Use snipe, use the Widowmaker marksman, use snipe to start shooting some of the stone bears out.
Yeah.
Start shrinking down that aura, you know, and don't look at it like maybe you have to try, you know, I don't have anything that can take that out this turn. But over the course of two turns, Widowmakers can.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and Widowmakers, with any unit with AD and speed 6, I mean, it only takes a couple turns of running until you're literally behind the entire brick.
Right.
And shooting it in the ass and killing Krill Stone Bearers. And that'll add, yeah. I mean, the Widowmakers are exceptional at that. That is such a good unit for 4 points.
Yep, they're super good. And when he drops, or when your opponent drops a brick down, he's already kind of dictating the tempo, you know, all the decisions about, you know, he knows how he's going to play his army. So all the decisions are kind of on you. They're all on your shoulders on how to break it. So that's why I said use Widowmakers or, yep, fast units to get around, start attacking the support from the sides, things like that. Because then if you're shrinking down the aura, now you're taking some of that tempo back. You're making him make decisions. You know, how far can I move with my shrinking aura this time? You know, things like that.
Yeah, another thing to remember too is like with things like Satrati or Mana War is Shield Wall is front arc. So
yep.
If you can flank it with some reasonably hard-hitting shooting, for example, like Legion Raptors, those guys will do some damage in the back arc of those units. So that's something to keep in mind as well. And Jay,
yeah, Legion Raptors, Tharn, Wolf Riders.
Yep.
Even trackers are good at that.
Yep. Yeah, blood trackers are with AD and speed 7 are they speed 6 or 7?
They're speed 7.
Speed 7. Yeah. That's a great flank unit in that particular role. Not necessarily always a flank unit, but against a brick, usually a flank unit. Also one thing about them that's very powerful is they out-threat. They can walk up and throw and bounce back, and sometimes depending on what the front of that brick looks like, that might out-threat the front of the brick. It doesn't do it for a lot of the troll bricks, especially with the Doom Shaper, like Epic Doom Shaper, you don't want to be doing that against because Mulg goes and eats the entire unit, you know. But there are some of those bricks are very slow. The Mana War one is an obvious one where, like, if you walk right up to the 10-inch range and throw your – or excuse me, the 7-inch range and throw your spears and then reform back, you're out of their 9-inch charge range. So that's something to consider as well. I still think they're better on the flank, though, overall.
In general, I'd say put them on a flank against a brick. Because like Jay was saying earlier, you don't want to throw everything head-on at it.
No.
Right.
That's asking for them to kill you and win.
But sometimes you do have to throw something at it. And that's a hard decision as well.
Another point to add to flanking bricks. Moving a brick is a very procedural thing. Anybody that plays a brick, you'll see them do their first turn. If you watch them play 10 more games, the first turn looks exactly the same.
Right.
And if you let them, their second turn will look exactly like the first turn. And their third turn will look exactly like the second turn until they're in that scenario. And if you can do anything to make them not be able to do that and have to start improvising how they're going to place that small footprint, and run their models over each other and stuff, it really hampers their movement, and it'll take them out of that formation, and that brick will start to not work. And that it's sort of like a house of cards where models need to be where they need to be, and if they're not there, they might as well not be in the list.
Yeah, I think again that's great advice against the troll bricks. It's not as good against like Xerxes because he has martial discipline.
Right, the move between move over each other definitely doesn't work as well.
Correct. Yeah, but it is very good advice against any brick that doesn't have that ability. And you know, it's probably not bad advice against Xerxes either. It's just not going to be as effective. But yeah, if you can screw up their order of activations by running to engage support models and things like that, that's very good.
Yeah, when they're considering moving some of that midline stuff to maybe free up, you know, make attacks and free up support models on turn two. Because you double ran with a speed 7 AD unit or something.
Yeah.
That really fucks up their second turn. And if you're playing something like Incursion, we've already discussed they might not have a breakout on something like that. But still, you're keeping them away from the middle of the table, and you could be maybe scoring scenario points because of it.
Let's talk about for a second, because you just reminded me when you said Incursion. Let's talk about the scenario that we think is best for bricks, where you're more than likely to see them. Is it destruction?
It's gotta be destruction.
Yeah.
The thing about destruction that is a little bit of a double-edged sword is the brick sort of relies on you eventually having to go engage it. And destruction's, you can put that off a long time. As the non-brick player, you can be like, hey man, I'm just going to back up or move to the sides. And those objectives on the corners, if they kind of put the brick in the middle of that, it really cuts down on like charge lane options. So you might buy yourself a couple of turns while they're killing objectives to really pick the list apart. Like it might be kind of a trap for them. I'm not sure. I never like letting my opponent go up on CP, but you might need to do it and then play your turns fast and try to really pick apart their stuff before you get back in that zone.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Counterpoint to that is they can just not play the scenario too while you're not playing it, maybe while they just keep sliding forward into that rectangle, like literally in the middle of that rectangle, and then you know when the game's getting to turn five or six, it's time to kill an objective.
Yeah,
and they're already standing there, and if nothing else, you said they stop charge lanes, they stop your charge lanes too, and they can start to squeeze in between their own objectives. Maybe that brick seems like it fits right in there.
It does. It does. I just think that Janissa wall can only cover one side of that rectangle.
Yeah.
So if I line up hard-hitting melee infantry on both sides of the box,
yeah,
and the front, you got some decisions to make. And you also have the decision, I might be baiting you into the split the brick, everything charges, now it's not a brick anymore.
Yeah.
Because that decision is the hard decision for the brick player, is when to do that. Because it inevitably happens with almost every brick style list. It especially happens with that troll one because the list goes from this compact little thing to like war beasts like a zillion inches away from Madrak.
Yeah,
right.
I think that particular scenario is kind of a playing chicken in the middle of the road for who's going to do it. And I think it probably comes down to a little bit of a mind game and maybe a little bit of just plain player skill.
I agree. I'm just saying, I think there might be something there that a really good player can take advantage of and maybe put the brick player in an awkward spot where they thought they were going to be in a dominant position and suddenly they start realizing that they're
not. I think when we talk about the envelopment strategy with these bricks, that's probably true on most scenarios, and it really is going to come down to player skill.
Yeah. So I mean, do you guys feel like envelopment's been covered fairly well? Do you want to get into like maybe control as another element?
Yeah, we can segue into control here because that's another way to crack the brick is to make it not a brick.
Right.
Yeah. Which, yeah, I mean, Bill, I know you were talking about, and actually, it's funny because you were playing Mike O, and he was playing a brick, and it's funny because he's. Ironic because he was asking about how to crack bricks, but you were playing him in a tournament and you managed to, with Ron, who is like the master of picking clumps of dudes apart, you managed to just be like, hey, give me that heavy, I'm going to kill it. Hey, give me that heavy, I'm going to kill it. And just kept pulling components of the brick out and picking them off one at a time.
Right. I don't recall. I think he might have been playing Xerxes, actually.
It probably was.
Scorn plays a lot of Xerxes, yeah.
Yeah, and Scorn doesn't really brick up too hard outside of Xerxes. They don't have any real need to brick up other than they're all huddling around a Kreia, I guess. You know, so maybe you see that. But
right. Well, I think the main issue he had with that brick is that he had his heavies were out in front, and I was playing Ron. So they were too slow. I would walk up with an arc node, and I would TK one out, turn him around, and reel him in with mittens, and like literally pull him into base-to-base with Hyperion, and Hyperion would kill it.
Yeah.
And then I would turn around his other two heavies, and then next turn another one's coming in.
Right.
It was preventable by maybe more experience with the brick, but certainly being able to physically move the models out of the formation they want to be in for that brick is a big deal. And yeah. Any caster that's got high focus and, you know, a high focus stat and can hit some of those higher defense behind wall heavies. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And literally move them out of the position that the brick player needs them to be in. Both takes that model maybe out of the defensive buffs that it was in if it's no longer in Surefoot or whatever, or behind the wall completely. Maybe now you've got some angles where it's not behind the wall. Or that also could be exposing that soft nougaty center of either the caster or Janissa or whatever, you know, whatever's making that brick run.
Yeah.
That thought it was safe behind these heavies. You know, if you slide two heavies over 2 inches each, you know, you're looking at a nice gap down the middle of that brick.
So, yeah, you're implying that, and I shouldn't say implying, but, you know, some of the aids to breaking the brick are obviously movement and spell. So TK instantly comes to mind. Any push-pull abilities come to mind. So mm-hmm. If you have access to those, you want to be, you know, cognizant of trying to do it that way. And the other thing I'd point out is, you know, talking about piece trades where, you know, maybe it's not the greatest trade or maybe you lose some points, but to break the brick, to give yourself a shot at the game, you know, maybe it's worth it. And that's where if maybe you wouldn't think of slamming with a particular heavy or something like that, or slamming a model, or that's something you don't do, you might need to be looking at that a lot more frequently against a brick, is to look to see, can I move this guy out, you know, with a TK or something, and then can I slam into it? And then that kind of causes havoc to the guy trying to keep control of his nice little organized bundle.
That was what I was going to say next, is that everyone has access to some sort of movement abilities in power attacks.
Yep.
Some are obviously better than others, but yeah, slamming and knocking something down still can offer those same options of now I can see into the middle of the brick. I mean, Surefoot stops that for sure, but
so maybe you do a two-hand throw against Surefoot or
exactly.
Whatever.
Maybe somebody has chain attack, grab and smash is the right guy for the job, where you can actually get a little bit more threat range on your two-hand throw before you make it. But things that move models, or even, you know, you get into the situation where maybe you're slamming your own models or throwing your own models.
Bill, the answer is clearly the Hydra. Because it has chain attack, grab, and smash.
That's exactly what I was thinking when I said that.
Well, most factions have access to grab and smash.
Right.
Yeah, that's a useful thing.
I don't think Legion does.
Good.
And can't Typhon, like, throw you with his heads or something?
Typhon has crit pitch.
Yeah.
Crit pitch, okay. That's
crit pitch.
Enough.
Abby can make Typhon have three open fists if he wants, you know.
Yeah.
They have some things there, but... you know, for me, the epitome of the brick is the ultra brick with P Madrak. He's control area 10.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you start chucking stuff around, he starts having a heart attack about Beast not being in his control area anymore.
Yep.
You know, all kinds of madness starts happening.
Well, and if you can get with your Kruger and Druids, or your Kruger 2, I should say, or your Ron list, or your, you know, those lists that really can hook things out of there. If you can kind of get an arc node laterally to the side of the wall where you can pull a beast out sideways, at that point, once you can get him past that wall and out of Surefoot, then, you know, it's open season on that guy.
Yeah.
So that's one point I wanted to make, and I think both of those casters are very good against bricks. Epic Haley, obviously, time walks the shit out of it. In addition, Bricks don't love having time bombs hitting them and dropping the front guy's speeds drastically. That's a big problem for Bricks as well. Like, you can cause a Brick player to lose on scenario with a control caster, like an Epic Kruger feat, an Epic Haley time bomb.
Inhospitable ground.
Inhospitable
right,
ground.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
P.I. Roost, everybody's friend, coming to the wind.
Those are going to be really, yeah, everyone's friend. Everyone, that's the most popular guy in high school, is that dude.
Right, he is.
Yeah, but so that's a point I wanted to make. The other thing, the other big spell card sort of addition that you want, and I've talked about this on other casts about how
– here it comes.
It's purification.
Yo.
Purification fucks mm-hmm. the hyper brick. The only thing left the only thing left is the wall. And obviously the wall is potent, but
– it's not as potent without Elemental Communion and Surefoot.
Yeah, especially if you've got – some options in your list for range knockdown. Like, you think of like maybe Cult of Cirrus, and I'm blanking on the light jack, but one of the light jacks is Earthquake.
Yep.
If you can combo up Father Lucant purifying all the buffs off, which is a huge problem anyway, and then you start chucking in knockdown into that as well, things are starting to go really bad. The infantry, like the Satrati shield wall, does not enjoy being knocked down a lot either. Like, you know, a Peace Striker Earthquake in the middle of all that, just knocking the whole thing down every turn. You're probably going to beat them on scenario because they're crawling. They're just walking every turn.
Yep.
So to add to that, Peace Striker, you want to talk about, you know, Epic Eris, knock it off, drop an Earthquake, stuff like that. Just kind of, you know, a two-step process.
Yeah, it can be difficult to get a ranged attack on Madrak in that list because he's yep. standing behind a wall of jacks and whatnot, a wall of heavy war beasts. But there's ways, and you know, Iris can flank is a great flanking model as well.
Even hitting there's, you know, sometimes they're base to base in a straight line, like all three heavies, but just taking down, just hitting one of them so it drops on one of them and knocking down that one. Now, again, you're making that troll player kind of make decisions. You know, do I leave this guy behind? I can't leave him behind. I gotta, you know, I gotta stand him up. You know, burn a fury to do that. Things like that.
Yeah, Brick is stripping Surefoot, and it can be very difficult. But if you can get Surefoot off Madrak with any kind of reliability, that list is probably in trouble.
Right, right.
Yep. So things that prevent casting of spells, just beyond purification, things that stop spells from happening.
Yeah,
Mage Blight comes to mind. It's 5 focus, but it could be still worth it.
Yep.
Probably,
The book.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nobody plays him, but Orin Midwinter.
Even like Lamentation's annoying.
Yeah, Lamentation's a huge fucking deal against it.
Yeah,
right.
Venithrax might actually be a good caster against just the Ultra.
Whoa.
You mean Campathrax?
Yeah. Hey. He likes killing heavy war beasts, and he has Lamentation. That seems
he like doing those things.
You know who else, or just in general, what's a good spell against? Probably the Ultra Brick, but maybe also Satrati with Kreia's behind them is Hexblast, because a lot of times they're jammed so close together that that 3-inch AoE of Hexblast is going to strip Animi. I believe the only thing I'm concerned about, and let me double check the wording on it. I think it's on
Hexblast needs a direct hit.
It needs a direct hit, but if you direct hit a model and then other models are caught in the AoE and those models have it upkeeps, do they get stripped as well?
Give me 2 seconds to flip that.
I'm digging in as well. I got my war room open. So we'll pause on that for a second, but go back to control for a second.
Just on the model unit directly hit.
Okay.
I just opened up to Gatsby 3 and Colossals. So.
Okay, so Hexblast, not as exciting as I was hoping. I was hoping I could knock all the Animi off, like all three war beasts that are in base to base, like shoot the middle one with it. That's obviously not the case. So purification, crazy better.
We all know how much Brian loves purification.
Hey man, those spells are of similar cost, but of drastically different skill level to use.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Just saying.
It always
man.
Comes down to this, doesn't it?
What the fucking big button and press it or don't.
That was my Goat Vaughn impression.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Let's not turn this into that.
No, I've gone on that rant before. I'm just saying the point is made. one of the control elements that's good against them is the fact that, hey, all your spells are gone and all your animi are gone.
Yeah.
That works on all the bricks because they're all predicated on some sort of whatever. The Creel Stone still works. The wall still works.
That's it.
But Sherwood and the Earthborn Animus goes away, and that's pretty big. So.
Yep.
So maybe going back to Mike's, you know, exact question of Scorn, Legion, and Kador. So with Legion, you know, for example, we just got done talking about purification. So like
Veil
Epic
two.
Veil. Yep, Veil 2, purification, maybe like repulsing some stuff away, or, you know, doing some odd things with repulse maybe. Or just purify and then just kind of light them up, you know, whatever.
Veil is just like designed to just screw bricks. I mean, unless the scenario is one where you're super pressurized where like you can't hit and run. I mean, she's basically just it's the rumble in the jungle. It's Muhammad Ali just long arm jabbing this brick in the face over and over again until it drops. It can't get to reach with it. She's stripping off all the defensive stuff. She's like, hey, this angel charges you and refuges away. Hey, this Ravagor shoots you. Hey, you know, like, it's a hard enough hitting list, and combo that with purification and refuge. It feels like a bad matchup for a brick player, in my opinion.
The other thing, you know, that we've kind of danced around a little bit, again, with Mike being the original guy to post this question, does he go after P-Madrex brick with – he plays Scorn. He plays Xerxes a lot. Does he go brick on brick?
Huh. That's an interesting question. I'm not sure. I think that's
kind of a point I was going to get on too, because a lot of times I will use my Butcher list as a brick breaker as well.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because if you have something that hits hard enough, and only a few factions can do that, but still.
So now we've gone envelopment, control, and now we're into just punch its face off.
Actually splitting the brick.
Yeah.
Cracking the nut, can you do it with your own brick?
And we don't mean splitting in the sense like physically separating the models into two separate chunks. We mean like actually killing shit.
Yeah, here you go. Middle fingers to your animus and spells and just
killing
them straight.
Through it. Well, I mean, the obvious stuff is to remove some of those spells before you try to kill it. But,
yeah,
but
it helps.
There's certainly some lists that have enough firepower to maybe just do it on their own. Denny 1 comes to mind.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah, but what can Denny 1 not do?
That's a combination of crazy hard hitting and control, because her feat is the best feat in the game.
Yeah, but I'm talking specifically the aspect of removing armor.
Yep.
It's basically anything that has Parasite and some Weapon Masters or
crazy damage buffs like Fury or...
Yep.
Well, look at... Again, this is where the two archetypes of bricks differ. One brick has Janissa, and if your Weapon Masters aren't high mat and reach, you're not going to be that effective.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Between Surefoot and the wall bonus, Def 16 against melee heavy war beasts... And you've got infantry, you know, maybe if you're playing a caster that has a way to boost melee to hit on your reach infantry, maybe like I'm trying to think of an example, Constance Blaze or Vlad 2 kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Scar 1, Kallus.
Scar 1 and 30 Bane Knights is just the answer to any of these lists. You're just like, yeah, you lose. I just kill the shit out of you. But outside of some of those lists, maybe those jankety Scar 1 with a lot of reach, anything probably it does all right because of how hard.
Yeah. Some of those lists that you've come up with in your head while you're driving. I wonder how high of a damage roll I can do. Those are the kind of lists that have a chance to actually
bring those. Yeah.
Just. I think you really disarm a brick when you're like, yeah, okay. So you got all that armor because they're like, look at all this armor. And you're like, look at all these dice.
So back to Kator a little bit. So a Fury Conquest with Ion on Holt.
What does that not kill? You know?
Right.
God.
Yeah.
Can you say overkill?
Well,
sure, but it explodes. It explodes those three heavies in the front there or whatever.
As long as I can hit them.
I'll one-up that another Kator example is maybe ditch the Fury because the defense is so high on those guys, and just roll right into Peace Orsha. Talking about Peace Orsha again. Feet on the whole front rank, stationary, all of them, and then you're basically just auto-hitting Pal 22s and 24s. So yeah, their armor's high, but auto-hitting is a big deal against Dev-16, because you're boosting otherwise. Like, that guy's – and you're boosting and you're still coin-flipping to hit. Like, 10s to hit sucks.
Right.
So it you know, that auto-hitting component might be a big deal.
So. Yeah, plus the freezing also comes with the benefit of now that Brick has a turn of not moving.
Correct. Yep. Well, some of it. In shake and whatnot, but yeah.
Even it's going to cost them a lot of fury to do that, though.
Yeah, even shaking is a big deal, just costing them that one. And then, you know, if Sorsha can sort of get to the side of the Brick when she feats and not just catch the very front rank, but maybe catch some of the back stuff in the stone.
Nightmare.
Or in the Xerxes example, it's way better against the Xerxes Brick because you're just like stationary infantry are awful.
Yep.
They literally just get time blocked. And that'll probably just lose you the scenario. If they catch you early enough with the feet, Dan, you did this to me once in a game where I was playing Scorn and you were playing Kator, and you basically just time walked me with your feet by locking down my Satrati and some other unit where they just sat there for a turn and then you won on
scenario. Yeah, I think it was like Satrati and Annihilators, and I had to feet turn one to do it, but
it was a very nice play. So that's going back to control maybe, but yeah.
We gotta go back to the non busting it open
the Epic Sorcerer's feat seems pretty all right against Bricks.
Yep.
Just the world explodes at the end.
Yep. All right, so do you think we did a good job dissecting the Brick there?
So to summarize, three components to attacking the Brick on the table, which is control, envelopment, and just straight, you know, nut cracking, if you will.
Yep, brute force.
Yep, brute force. And then prior to that, sort of playing list chicken based on the scenario and based on what you brought. And again, I think the end result now that we've talked about this is you don't have to bring an anti-Brick list, but you better bring a list that does one of those three components well.
Right.
So maybe that is your anti-Brick list that also covers another bad matchup. You know, in Signar, I've kind of come to realize I think it might actually just be – it has to be Epic Haley. I don't know if any of my other lists do it well enough. At least against Control Brick, I've had an awful time – with most of my Signar lists against it.
Before you get too deep, I think what you can do is look at the list you already play and think about which one of those roles they would be best at, and maybe you already have your anti-Brick list.
Yeah. Yeah, potentially.
I mean, you could always...
Went on a Signar tangent. He was like...
Yeah, just because Signar came to mind, you know, my love got brought up, so I just wanted to say, well, I'm on the waiting list for Terran with Ground Pounder Siege.
Oh, you know, yeah, that's good. That's really good, actually.
If Mulg or whoever the middle, you know, line of sight blocking beast is just disappears and now you're ground pounding into the back ranks, stuff happens.
Counterpoint, though, just drop him in the foxhole.
Yeah, fucking foxhole that shit.
Or that, too.
Yep. Although it does put a strain on your focus. It's much better if it's just like, oh, I open up a narrow lane with Terran and shoot right into the middle of it. Awesome.
I'll boost engine, you know, pop my, you know, maybe feet or boost damage on Janissa, boost damage on all the Creelstone guys, whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, Siege is one of those few, like, super few Signar casters that can actually try to crack the Brick because of his feet.
Yeah. Right.
You just have to have a perfect feet turn, in my opinion. In my playing of Siege, the games that I don't use the feet extraordinarily well, I have it's generally a loss. I can look back at those games and be like, I didn't get enough mileage out of the feet and now my game's over. But yeah, that's probably one of the few Signar lists that can just go straight at it. The other one maybe is like an Epic Kane Keith style, every nutcracking merc option. And this goes to actually
we just hit the trifecta of Keith, Chuck, and Jake.
We got market.
And I also want to point out that before we get too far away from it, that armor piercing, I think, can be a little bit of a trap against stacking armor because it doesn't subtract half off those buffs.
Yeah, it only cuts the base armor.
Yeah. Yeah, order of operations on the math makes it sad. That being said, I really like Jay's idea, which is get the second rank with the blow up Janissa, you know, et cetera. That's pretty good.
Do you think, so would P. Kane ignore everybody up front and shoot all the Creel Stone out?
Yeah. You just got to be careful that you're teleporting back and not going to get a Mulg in the face next turn.
Exactly.
Yeah, because P. Kane can be really rough if you can't get that line.
Yeah.
Right.
We got four mines here. Why don't we maybe run down all the factions and just top of the head, we find one caster that's probably a decent brick breaker and maybe give the reason why.
Okay.
Sure.
Signar.
Epic Haley, Troll, Siege for damage, like we discussed. I think both of those are probably the best.
Kador.
Agreed.
Butcher for cracking it for sure.
Yep.
Anybody control? P. Sorcerer for control?
P. Sorcerer can control. Old Witch can also do a bit of the control. Her feet is kind of against a brick, but you can slow it down and you can gallows pieces out of the way.
Good enough. Menoth? Yep.
I'm going to go
Purification.
Any of the Purification casters.
How about Krios? P. Krios.
P. Krios against the...
He's got the soup. P. Krios has a super trifecta against that.
Yeah, Purify and knock everybody down.
Purify, knock everybody down, and Lamentation so they can't do it again.
So hold on. Let's stop just for a second. Let's all acknowledge that P. Krios and maybe Menoth in general literally can do all three of those things.
With one list.
One list. Maybe not so important to envelop when the entire fucking enemy list is knocked down and you've shot it to pieces. But okay, two out of the three isn't bad, right?
Purify, Feat, Lamentation, Engage, Ancillary Attack, Reckoners, all that jazz. Game over, right?
Set everything on fire. Fuck it.
Pretty much. Set everybody on fire.
Okay. Crix.
P. Denny.
Denny.
Scar with Reach Infantry also.
Sure. Yep. At more Banes.
More Banes. All the Banes.
60s.
Retribution, I think it really needs to be probably Ron, or to a lesser degree, maybe Viros 2 has a chance at cracking things.
I think Ossian can blow up the infantry bricks fairly well. He may struggle against these bricks.
Yeah.
It depends, because I've had experience with Ossian against the Xerxes brick before. That didn't work out so well. Split it up early, and then eventually the armor just became too much. Because once your feet's gone, you can't hurt anything.
Yeah, seems like it's a one turn to crack the brick if you don't.
That's my thing with Siege and Epic Sorsha as well, is you better crush with that feet turn because your output drops significantly after that.
Right.
And generally those casters that have those big damage feet turns don't have much board control because it's a balancing thing, obviously. You know?
Okay. You know,
yeah, Epic Sorcerer still has Freezing Grip, but that's a lot of focus.
Oh, and you know, Prime Denny, of course, has all the things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Trolls. P. Doomy with Purification?
Right.
Yeah, I think P. Doomy is just a pretty good anti-Trolls caster in general, because he's so good against Hordes anyway.
Mm-hmm. And you always have the counter-brick option?
Yep.
P. Doomy, you can Purification, then use your feet to punish them for trying to set up again.
Yep.
Yeah, he's really phenomenal against Hordes. And Rampager is just like, hey, cool, I just pull this beast. This beast walks out of the brick and I kill it.
Yep.
Or walks just away from the brick in the wrong direction and creates a problem for the next turn. Like you were talking about earlier, Bill, just sort of manipulating where the pieces end up.
Yep. Versus Trolls, I think that the, Sunder Spirit? No, not Sunder. The one that gives a focus to, or a fury to every beast in his control.
Yeah, that's a good play too. Yeah,
it's pretty hard for Madrak to pull that fury back off. You're going to have some frenzying guys, or at least some overloaded ones. Okay, what about Legion? Go.
Veil 2.
Veil 2 for sure.
So Purification.
Again.
Purification, yeah. Refuge Angel.
Absalonia with her Blightfield seems really good against any kind of beast heavy.
Yeah, they're
list
all clumped
in general.
Together. Get a couple in that Blightfield sounds really good.
If it's the beast heavy versions of these kind of bricks, troll ones, you know, etc.
Scorn, go.
Crack the Xerxes.
Yeah, Tiberian
counter
bronze
brick.
Backs.
Counter brick or apply more bronze backs.
Either.
So we can pretty much we're gonna try and outbrick the brick.
I guess. It doesn't even have to. You don't have to outbrick it. You can just bring Scorn Warbeast and Scorn Warbeast support and probably do okay.
Bronzebacks Mammoth.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems good.
Circle.
Double stones.
Double stones.
Teleport a stalker behind the brick. Go berserk. Kill all the pieces.
Hit. Yeah.
Purification.
Morvana 2. See, the thing about Morvana 2 is she doesn't bring a ton of armor cracking, but she does have the purification.
And she can she can just feet models behind the brick.
Yeah, she can do that. Again, maybe putting herself at risk, though, like the light cav move.
Light cav move into double stones.
May or may not be enough at that point.
You were saying about putting her in trouble?
Yeah, you had to put her into stones and get her out of there, like way out of there.
Yeah.
Can I make one point before we're kind of wrapping this up? So real quick, what about Mostar putting Pillars of Salts in front of it? They have to move around it, and then Sun Hammering
down or split them up.
Like Sun Hammering then, so if they move, everybody's taking D3 or the beasts are taking D3.
Yeah, I think Mostar is the only caster that can actually get legitimate use out of Sun Hammer, and the Pillars of Salt are a problem for a lot of the brickless. At the very least, they're walking up and trying to poke them to death with high pal melee attacks.
Yep.
And that can actually really fuck up their order of activations too.
Because, puns.
You know, it's got to be a war beast that doesn't move very far and then takes a punch. I think Mostar is a pretty good play. Again, he's another one of those casters, kind of like Doomy 1, where he's just way better against hordes. So
which is what we've been focusing on with these bricks anyway.
Mostly. Well, we talked about, like, Manowar bricks and things like that, too. And there's sort of other bricks, like the Epic Kane brick, which is, like, Boomhauers plus a bunch of support kind of behind, sort of bricking up. But it's not the same thing, really.
Soon to be Father Lucant brick.
Yeah. That could be nasty. That's going to be the brick that effectively just turns off shooting. Like, you're just like, I don't shoot anything. Yep. Like, if you brought a list that's predicated on ranged attacks, like, you just lost. It's over.
Merker minion options for breaking bricks.
Well, all the super sweet solos that hit really hard, and Rask, his lists hit like a brick shithouse, so maybe that works.
I'm thinking maybe Maelok incorp through the brick and kill what's behind it.
Speaking of bricks, Maelok is a brick. We forgot about
Maelok. Gators in general are a brick.
A dead brick.
Especially a brick.
I'm going to just do a quick story. Playing in Gen Con's Rocky Pass table a couple of years ago, I'm running a 50-point list against a 25-point Barney list, and I'm sitting here, I'm like, I can't kill anything.
And you're just, like, wedged in this little area trying to pass it.
It's Ironflesh dirged gators in swamp pits.
That sounds really fun. Whoever set that's
terrain. It's not that fun.
I'm not even going to ask why you're playing 50 points against 25 points.
That's like, the way the scenario was set up.
Yeah, like
a scenario table.
You know, they make cool terrain, and then you play kind of a funny, you know, a funsy scenario on it. But yeah, that sounds awful. That sounds not fun for anybody involved.
Except for the Gator player.
Yeah, I guess so.
They're just laughing at you while you do nothing to their army.
Pretty much. Getting back to Circle, Epic Ruger, because of his intensely amazing boar control, gallows, TK. All the fun things.
Yep.
Yep.
Feet is a kick in the dick too. So.
Yep.
Merc landslide.
Oh yeah.
All right, Gorton.
Oh yeah, I forgot. I didn't think of that. That's really good.
You can do those in the right order, and you can really break that brick apart wide open.
Also, not a often played caster. Magnus 2. I can't remember the name of his feat.
Oh yeah, Killbox.
Fucking super good against a brick for the same kind of reasons.
Yep.
Okay.
Sort of just more control stuff.
And just more armor cracking. So, you know, a lot of Merclis rely on the Ion and Holtz and whatnot of the Ragman's Gorman. Gorman in general is a extremely potent anti-brick piece, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
A key, like, against the Ultra Brick, just, oh, look, I walked up as close as I can get out of reach range of Mulg and threw Black Oil from a couple inches away. It's probably going to miss because they're high defense, but more than likely you're going to catch...
More than one model.
If you black oil a couple heavies for a turn, I found that works pretty damn well.
Yep.
So,
or if you black oil your own behemoth, that's a story for another day.
Another day.
That's an option, I guess.
Does that cover bricks?
I think we got a nice
faction there. Minions we talked about a little.
I said Minion Merc.
Minion Merc.
I don't think I forgot anybody.
And like, even on the Magnus front, Magnus has P Magnus has his feet to envelop, and E Magnus has mobility. So,
yeah,
I think we did a pretty good job. You know, let the forum debates begin. So, where can they do that, Brian?
Well, nice tie-in, Jay. Thanks.
Sure.
We have a Facebook group or Facebook page, I guess it's called, when you have a thing like this. It's just Warman's podcast, I believe.
Warman.
I think it's just Warman's.
You'll find it.
Yeah.
So we've got lots of good discussion happening there. I post little poll questions that people that tend to sort of prompt some good discussion every week. Trying to do it on a daily basis, not quite that often, but I'm getting it done. And then also, you know, we're on the Muse Network, so the fantastic Muse on Minis forums that are the greatest forums on Earth, there's some great threads there. And we're going to put a weekly podcast thread up there. So by the time you hear this, there'll be a Warman's episode 3. That's the episode we're on, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
That. There'll be a thread that says Warman's episode 3 and then some sort of snarky title. So go post there.
Sweet. Anything else you want to say before we take it home?
Just wanted to thank our two guests. You guys did a great job.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, man, for having us on. It's good. Talking about KTOR, watch out. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having us. I look forward to, you know, coming on again if you guys want me.
All right, guys.
Cool.
All right, guys, that's a wrap. Roll credits.
Whoa.